Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Excuse me. Now, tonight, Bard's Logic welcomes Republican Congressional 2014 candidate Peter Breedwell. Of course, callers and chat participation are welcome. So come and talk with the host, panelists, guests, and other audience members. All mics do stay open, so join us in our roundtable discussion. Now tonight, Bard's Logic, as I said, welcomes conservative Republican congressional candidate Peter Greenwald, and we will discuss his run against Representative Eric Cantor for the GOP Virginia congressional primary. And this is kind of a little excerpt from his website. Says Peter Greenwald is the style of a Reagan conservative. He served during the Cold War to defeat communist aggression. After his first fleet tour, he earned a master's degree in national security affairs. In 1992, he became a flight deck officer. And then in 1994, Peter worked at the United States Air Force Academy teaching military arts and sciences. He joined the multinational operations as a name of the course. And then in 1997, he left active duty and served in the Naval Reserves. He returned to active duty in 2000, accepting orders to Naval Air Reserve Whidbey Island, Washington, and then to major staff from 2002 to 2004. And from 2004 to 2006, served as the head of manpower and personnel policy for the Naval Reserve Force. From 2006 to 2008, Peter led nearly 1,000 Navy reservists as the commanding officer of Navy Operations Support Center in Columbus, Ohio. Following his command tour, he volunteered for and accepted orders to serve in Afghanistan from 2008 and 2009. Upon his return, Peter retired from active duty, and he is currently serving as a senior naval science officer in Neholsen, Virginia. And so we'll have them on tonight, but also, folks, I want to also ask you to later on go check out some of our friends at the Patriots Bunker, and that's by going to www.thepatriotsbunker.com, and also check out Overpasses for America. And coming up on the 22nd of this month, we have the Pray to End Abortion event that is going on the Patriot Journalist Network. So check that out by going there as well. So without further ado, we will bring on our special guest tonight, and that is Peter Greenwald. Thank you very much for coming to the show, Peter. How are you?
Hey, Robert. Doing great. Thank you so much for having me on tonight. Pleasure being with you and your listening audience.
Awesome. Great. And we're really excited to hear someone in a conservative such as yourself and grassroots for that matter, because grassroots are very important to the folks here on the show, to hear up going up against Eric Cantor. I know he's been a very big disappointment of late. So I'll do that to start the interview here with the questions. Is what was your main motivation for running against Representative Cantor?
Hey, Robert, I hope we can spend some time with that question. You know, just giving some background. It's a I guess can't really point directly to Eric Cantor, because I think there's something more profound, more fundamental about me running it, and that's really begins with my love for God and my love for country. I think, you know, America really was the miracle that changed the world. You know, really we first experienced in the history of mankind liberty for the first time. And, you know, I think it's, I guess it's appreciation of that, of this special place we call America and what our founding fathers started here, and my love for that. I think it really prompts me to and motivates me, and as well as my Christian faith, it gives me a sense of right versus wrong, and it gives me, I think, a better understanding that it's God, the creator that our founding fathers pointed to, that gave us our rights. I mean, right there in our declaration, it says, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. I think it's in part of my Christian faith. It gives me, I think, a better understanding, appreciation, and the importance of our God-given rights, and that government here is there to secure our rights. And I think that's the foundation for our country, those declaration principles. And then from that, our founding fathers, you know, they realized Articles of Confederation, you know, those weren't working for us, and they came up with the Constitution. And we need to uphold that. And as a in 1976, I became aware of Ronald Reagan. I was eighth grade, and he inspired me. I think Ronald Reagan had also a real love for our country. I see Ronald Reagan as a patriot. And, of course, I wasn't able to vote then, and I was disappointed to see him lose to Gerald Ford. But he ran against in 1980. I got to cast my first vote in 1980 for Ronald Reagan. And then when I graduated from the University of Illinois, I was able to join the Navy as part of the Reagan buildup to fight communism. And, you know, he made it, as I did, I saw him on the world stage, and he made it very clear, this is a fight against evil, the evil of communism. Because what communism does is it takes away people's liberty and enslaves them. It forms a tyranny over the people. And we've seen that in communism around the world, whether it be the Soviet Union or whether it be communist China, whether it be Vietnam, or we see that around the world. So, you know, I was glad to be a part of that throughout the late 1980s. And I'd like to think I was, you know, part of the some small part of the defeat of communist expansion and the fall of the Soviet Union, the fall of the wall in 1989. But yet in 2008 to 2009, I found myself in Afghanistan, and I'm watching an election back here in the United States. And, you know, Robert, I just couldn't sleep anymore. Now, maybe many people in your audience are that way. I'm very troubled that there's something, a transformation going on in America that we're just beginning to maybe understand and appreciate. And since our government is of we the people, I think maybe in some way President Obama really reflects us as we the people, that we've been complacent. We've been following the example of our founding fathers who pledged there at the end to put the support of the Declaration with the support of divine providence, our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. They understood sacrifice. And I think that's where I'm at today. I think it's maybe perhaps already lost America, and now we have to fight to get it back, and that will take our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. It is going to take some sacrifice on the part of all of us, we the people, to get our country back. And so that's, I think it's part of it now. That kind of brings me to Eric Cantor. So, I mean, that's all background. And I know in 2009 with the Affordable Health Care Act, that's when he got my attention and was able to become part of involved with the local Tea Party here and joined some fellow patriots. We drove up with some strangers up to the Capitol and protested. And then in 2010, I think we were all part of bringing the Republicans into the majority. And that brought Eric Representative Cantor into House Majority status, and became a leader. And Robert, we have to expect leaders to lead. Leaders cannot lead from behind. They have to lead by example, and you can't do that. I was just looking at Heritage Action. Representative Cantor has a Heritage Action report out of him he's got a conservative record of about 55%. It's below the average of the House. And you can't lead from behind, Robert. That concerns me. So just on a various issues. But then it was in 2011, they had an opportunity to leave. And that was by saying no to raising the debt ceiling. And I heard, you know, cut, cap, and bounce. Yes, it looks like, you know, they're going to do it. They're going to stand strong on the debt ceiling. And but no, they raised the white flag. They negotiated a sequester, which affected me personally, because I'm still involved with the Department of Defense through my Navy Junior ROTC program in here at James River High School. I think that was somewhat ill-advised. I was glad for some cuts, but seemed ill-advised. And then about $2.4 trillion later, Robert, in October 16th, it kind of became a point in time. I saw the Marines, the debt ceiling again, and I said, you know, that's enough. You know, I don't know if anybody's going with me. Robert, I don't know if anybody's with me, but I'm going to throw myself out there. We're going to go run for office against Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, in some kind of David and Goliath effort to unseat Eric Cantor. I believe it's, it really gets back to, I'll just say, leadership, Robert. I think it's failed leadership. We need, I think, true conservatives who are willing to stand on principle and to get our country back. So hopefully that wasn't too long, Robert. That's what's on my heart this evening, Robert.
No, that's fine. I appreciate your answers. And as long as you want them to be, that's fine. I mean, we're here to get to know more about you and your campaign. And you mentioned communism, just to put information out about next week. Next week we will be having Dr. Evelyn on next week, and also her daughter, Nicole, who are going to be talking about how they had some travels over in Cuba and over in Colombia, and coming back, they're going to give us some reports on what they've seen there and some of the disturbing observations they made, in which how America is kind of leaning towards or sliding to more communist country. So they're going to be talking about that next week, the 15th.
You guys are doing some great work. I mean, educating, because we're this is one campaign I'm in, but we are in a war. This has been going on for decades. I would say, you know, I can take you back to 1913. We'll talk about that later, but certainly in the 1960s. There has been an effort by some, it's all based on Marxist thought, of course, that they've sought to transform America. And that's been, 40, 50 years that that's been ongoing. And, it's not going to have this change to get America back. It's not going to be done in a week, a month, a year. This is going to be decades, to get America back. But I think that's a start. This is a great start.
Great. I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to it and having those both on as well. And one thing, you know, we'll move on to the next question here is, you know, Bard's Logic prides itself, I like to think of us, on being a show for we the people. And tell us about your vision in restoring the United States back to the constitutional republic our founding fathers intended. And as a representative, what would you do to work towards this?
Robert, got ready to talk to you, I pulled out my Constitution again. I think we need, whatever we do in Congress, whatever I do, I will get back to Article 1, Section 8. These are the limited, enumerated, and defined powers of the Constitution, which we've gone well beyond. And I think we have to begin with this understanding. And there's that the quote from George Washington, which says this: we need to have this fundamental understanding of government, as George Washington said, that it's not reason, it is not eloquent, it is a force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. So I think we understand this nature of government. I think whatever we do there in Congress, we have to understand, have that fundamental understanding of government. And Patrick Henry went on to say, you know, the Constitution is not an instrument for the government to restrain the people. It's an instrument for the people to restrain the government. So that's my... I'm not a lawyer, Robert. That's my fundamental understanding, basic understanding of what the Constitution does. So based on Declaration principles, it is there to secure our rights. So whatever we do in Congress, we need to ensure it's securing rights. Too much of what's going on today is taking away from that. So I would like to, I think one of the, if I could do, we can do one thing. We can do one thing. And that would be to get the fair tax. I mean, that's one thing we could do, because I think, because it affects everybody. We could eliminate the income tax and move towards the fair tax. And this is first sponsored by Congressman Linder out of Georgia. It's a House Resolution 25. Because it really frees all Americans. I think that as I'm getting to more and more understand this nature of the income tax, it is corroding the character of the American people, and it's used by many to further divide Americans, whether it be along particularly along class lines. Robert, I see that as very destructive to us as a country. Our founding fathers, it's right there in our Pledge of Allegiance. In three areas of the Pledge of Allegiance, it talks about the importance of uniting us as a country, as states, and as the people, but yet we use something as the income tax divide us. So this, especially with the marginal tax rates, I think it's very divisive for us. It really plays upon, you know, Abraham Lincoln told us to always reach towards our higher nature. The income tax, the way it's used today, appeals to our lower nature. It plays upon fear. It plays upon jealousy. It plays upon envy. And it places the American people under great tyranny with, I think, the highest rate, what, 39%? I mean, 39%, think about that. You would take 39 cents would be gone of every dollar that you earn. But that'd be the one thing, I think, to free the American people with a free tax, with a fair tax, because it takes away the Social Security, those so-called contributions, Social Security, and Medicaid contributions we make, as well as the federal income tax itself. It combines this, as well as the corporate tax. Eliminates all those and replaces it with a national sales tax, approximately 23%. And that would, I think, just liberate us, Robert. That would totally liberate us. And we'd get rid of all the 73,000 pages of tax code. And that reminds me, Robert, of a James Madison quote. It says, "It will be of little avail to the people that the laws are made by men of their own choice, the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood." I mean, that's that. James Madison warned us about a 73,000-page tax, but he warns with 2,000-page Affordable Health Care Act. We don't do those things. So as a congressman, as your congressman, Robert, to represent the people of 7th District, we're not going to do that. We're going to have laws that we can read, laws that we can understand, that the people can understand, that we the people can understand, and that lead to securing our rights, not putting us in a place of tyranny, like the Affordable Health Care Act does. I mean, every day there's more news. I can't keep up with anymore, Robert. Every day there's more news coming out about the bad news coming out on Obamacare. Just another example. But if we could do one thing, it would be to eliminate the income tax and replace it with the fair tax. I think that would do much to liberate us. Robert, could I add one more point to that?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking, it's just what I see in my personal life. You know, Alexis de Tocqueville said, he told when he came to visit America in the 1800s, he said what made America was great, that the pulpits across America, the churches, were aflame with righteousness. That the American people clearly understood what was, that there was good and there was evil, and that we need to pursue that which is good, including looking out for each other and respecting each other's rights, and not coveting and not envying, and what it meant to be a good citizen, living a good life. They would do that, and they would stand up on the major issues of the day. But today, the pulpits, Robert, I'm fearful that they're quiet. They are not speaking out on the major issues of the day. Because why? Because of their tax status under the income tax. So if I could do one thing, I want to free the American people of the income tax, including those who should be standing up for us, those who are in the pulpit. I'm afraid they're, I'm afraid of sometimes the people in the pew, sometimes afraid that they're losing some type of tax break under the mm-hmm. current tax system. So Rob, that would be the one thing I do as your congressman. But that would be closely followed with, we're going to talk about a lot of things tonight, but we can talk about rights and the government's secure rights. But Robert, if we aren't willing to defend the most innocent, the most defenseless, the weakest among us, the unborn, then really all this is, to me, this is all meaningless. If we don't first do that, that's why I support a personhood amendment, that we would define life as under mm-hmm. our Constitution, the First Amendment. We will define life as beginning from the point of conception onwards. So, I'd have to say that is perhaps, I guess, a higher priority in a sense for me as your congressman.
Well, great. And since you're bringing it up, I want to remind folks also again of the Patriot Journalist Network, patriotjournalist.com. Check out the Wednesday, January 22nd from 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, the Pray to End Abortion event there. So definitely, folks, check it out. And you were talking about taxes, and now that Obamacare, I guess, is considered a tax, thanks to our Supreme Court, we'll kind of shift gears over to that. And I'd like to get your opinion on the Steve King and the Wally Herberg discharge petitions on Obamacare. What's your opinion on those?
Yeah, Robert, every time that's my second time being with an online interview, and I'm glad you forwarded that question. I was not familiar with that, so I had to do some research, and I understand the difference between Steve King and I'm forgetting the other gentleman's name, pulled up my notes there. Other congressman there,
Wally Herger.
Well, as I understood it, Steve King, who I have a great deal of respect for. I've seen him on the national stage. He's a man. He seems, from all that I can tell, a man of principle. And he has stood strong. He has called for the full repeal of Obamacare, and that's where I stand. I stand with Steve King. I think any role of the federal government other than to give us some regulation and allow the free market to work is unconstitutional. So as you asked me about that, I'm standing with Steve King if I'm choosing between the two in order to just completely repeal it. There were four Supreme Court justices that ruled in their part of the ruling that they said that is unconstitutional. So I stand with Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas and Justice Alito and Justice Kennedy that's unconstitutional and we need to have it repealed.
Yeah, and from my understanding, both Boehner and Cantor are not very, they're giving it lip service, but they're not really serious about it. They just want to nip around the edges. And I think that's what the Wally Herger is doing, and I think that's one I think they have more support for.
I think so. And here's the test. Here was the test of leadership, again, Robert. They had an opportunity, one last opportunity, to stop Obamacare through defunding, and they raised the white flag again. They failed. Someone advised me, well, we need Pete. You should go speak with Eric Cantor and have the conversation that I thought about. I gave it some serious thought, Robert. But then I go, well, no, I have to go ultimately, even if I had a conversation with the person, which we couldn't have this summer, by the way. We'll talk about that later. You have to look at a man's actions. And the actions tell me that, they were unwilling to take the strong, and they knew it all. They knew what was coming. I think we understood, to some extent, what a disaster this would be for the American people, and that they failed to stand strong. Although Senator Cruz, again, probably because he's from Cuba, and he understands communism, his family understands communism, his father still understands communism, and Senator Lee took a stand against it. I expected that the Speaker of the House and the House Majority Leader would have rallied to that conservative banner being waved by the two senators, but they didn't. So, we need to hold them accountable. And that's not the leadership we need as if we're going to restore our constitutional republic.
Yeah, I believe that's one of the points, actually, that was leading to my next question, was about the failed leadership of Cantor, of the Republican Party, and failed conservatives. It's obvious that you believe that he has. And you could touch on that more, or we can move into the next question. And that's, we could do both of these at the same time. As your website mentions the elites, and Cantor could even be thought of as part of those. I think the elites in our government are what makes it even more important for grassroots candidates such as yourself to get elected. So if you could share your thoughts with us on that point as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm fairly new to Virginia. It's my fifth year, but so I'm getting to know the politics here a little bit. I'm not a politician. I'm a naval officer. I like to think of myself as a patriot, somebody who loves this country and, of course, loves God. But as I look out there, I think 12 years in Washington, I think, is too long for any man. So I'm in favor of term limits and been reading Mark Levin's Liberty Amendments. And he's got Mark Levin's a great mind, great constitutional scholar. And I can only encourage all your listeners to, if you haven't already, pick up some Mark Levin's books, Liberty and Tyranny, or Emeritopia, or his latest Liberty Amendments. It's a lot of what's framed my thoughts. And term limits, Mark Levin proposes 12 years. Would that be 12 in the House or 12 in the Senate or 6 in each? I think it's, we need that because they're spending too much time in Washington. I put a quote on my site from Jack Abramoff about that. And he says, it's easy to buy somebody if I don't have to buy somebody new every 6 years. It's all a matter of test of everyone's character. But I think Washington's a tough place, and we need to be ready to go with her for a while, do the will of the people, look out for all Americans, and then come back home. And that's what I'm about. I'm looking to go to D.C., serve the people of the 7th District, and come back to James River and keep molding young minds with my cadets, or if I can't run up and down the ultimate field with them any longer, I need to make my way over to John Tyler and teach government over there. But let me find my place. But let me get back to Congressman Cantor. This summer he held no town halls. It seems to me that he's lost touch with the people of 7th District. I think it's time to get back. So I think that tells it right there. I mean, if you're not going to come out and meet with the people and take the hard questions from your constituents, then I think it's time to go.
And very many mirror your thoughts on that. And I want to hear, I'm sure, more about the issues, so we'll go to that. And, some of the issues that are important to the conservatives, of course, are small government, gun rights, securing our borders and immigration, religious freedom, mm-hmm. and protecting the unborn. Where do you stand on those issues? I know you've touched on things such as protection of the unborn. And if you want to go into some depth for each of one of those.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with, because I've had to get educated on the Second Amendment a little bit, and as I was digging into that, Robert, I came to understand. I've recently picked up a book about the gun control in Germany, and through that reading, learned what really started the Weimar Republic. It really started with the registration of the arms that enabled the Democratic Socialist Party, the Nazis, to come in actually then take away the arms. So I believe, Robert, that any registration by any government, whether it be federal, state, or local, represents an infringement upon your Fourth Amendment rights. I don't think it's any government's business whether you have arms in your house. So if you're a God-fearing, law-abiding citizen, you should be no infringement upon you're right, really, this is about self-defense. It's all the right to bear arms. That really gets back to, you're right, the self-defense, Robert, that, you know, and throughout my side, I try to go back to my Judeo-Christian values and principles. The Bible tells me thou shalt not kill. And, of course, the opposite of that is you have a right to self-defense. Well, the government shouldn't tell me how I'm going to do that or limit how I'm going to defend myself and my family. So, you know, it's a God-given right. The government shouldn't infringe upon that. So, that's our right to bear arms. It's really about your right to self-defense, your right to preserve your own life, and government shouldn't infringe upon that. I guess we should move on to
Securing the border.
Let's talk about securing the border, Robert. I try to put that on my website in the context of national security. I want to view that in this greater context. I guess it says something about the American people that were just asleep or something, that I would have expected that after 9/11 we would have immediately secured the border. Now, Robert, clearly, if we can win World War I and World War II, and we can have victories in Iraq and victories in Afghanistan, around the world, that we have the ability to secure our border. We just seem to have we lack the willingness. So we have the ability, we just lack the will. So we need to secure the border. Two things. If we don't know who's coming across, I mean, Al-Qaeda's active around the world. They're smart. They're going to take advantage of an open border. It wouldn't surprise me. I'm off active duty. I'm not in a position where I've got access to, you know, classified information, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's Al-Qaeda cells here in America. I mean, if they seek to bring us down, seek to do us harm, they just simply come across our borders that are not secure, and they will do harm to the American people, which again, Robert, tells us that, you know, that if I go back to my preamble, it states what the primary duty of our federal government is to provide for the common defense, where they're failing at the primary duties. So again, I go back to leadership. That falls on Speaker Boehner. That falls on when you volunteer for a leadership position, you take the responsibility that comes along with that. And they have failed to secure the border. And then it gets worse, Robert. Now, instead of securing the border, you know, I've heard reading a couple articles that seem to indicate that Speaker Boehner and House Majority Cantor are now considering some type of amnesty bill, and I'm going, well, that's not the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because of amnesty, Robert, amnesty divides Americans. The border and amnesty divide Americans, and you ask, well, how is it? Well, I experienced that firsthand. You know, if our borders were secure, Robert, many Americans would be asking, well, they would be asking if their fellow Americans were illegal or not. That question would cross your mind. So, I mean, it's natural for Americans to ask, you know, are some people here legally?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the government had done their job, we would unite Americans within our borders. And, of course, then there's the basic unfairness. You know, we're supposed to have justice for all under the law. We don't have that when you have chaos on the border. You know, we have a personal story. You know, I served in Afghanistan. We had translators, Afghans, working with us. Well, they jeopardized. They put their lives at risk when they sided with us in that there was elements, the Haqqani and others, insurgents in Afghanistan, so that they could find who they were. You know, their lives were at risk. Well, they're able to apply for citizenship in the United States. Well, they're waiting in line. While their lives are at risk, they're waiting in line while serving us in Afghanistan. And yet we allow others to come across our border. But, Robert, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that makes sense to most Americans. So we need to secure the border, no amnesty. And that gets me back, I guess, I don't pull up my Constitution again. I forget it's the 13th, the 14th, the 15th Amendment. But, you know, they've twisted that. We've distorted that as well as many, or misapplied that as we've done with many parts of our Constitution over the years. But I guess it's Amendment 14. You know, if you were born here, you're a citizen. Well, that, Robert, in the context of the post-Civil War, that applied to those who were slaves or weren't considered citizens. It's a misapplication, I believe, of the 14th Amendment to apply that to the so-called anchor babies. If you're born here from an illegal immigrant, then that doesn't make you a citizen, at least the way I read it. So that's where I stand on that.
Okay, now, you know, we discussed some on protecting the unborn, and we do have a couple other questions, and I want to be able to get them in so I can also get some audience questions and the panelists' questions. But we have, what about religious? I mean, I'm kind of already presume what I know the answer on this one, but the last we'll have is religious freedom before we move on to the next question.
Yeah, you know, it's, they're, I'm hearing the stories coming out of the military today. We're infringing upon even the rights of chaplains to pray in accordance with their faith. You know, they're there to serve their fellow soldiers or airmen or Marines. Of course, it's Navy chaplains take care of Marines. But, you know, the government has no business infringing upon a chaplain's exercise of his faith. He's there to serve his fellow military members. I guess that's the most egregious thing I'm seeing today. I mean, I feel the cold chill coming through, I guess, our schools as I'm serving at James River High School. I mean, I should, and I do in my office, I should be, you know, or my faith is not a Sunday morning kind of thing. As a Christian, I'm called to live out my faith 24/7. I'm supposed to be loving God and loving others. I mean, that doesn't end when I walk out of the doors of church on a Sunday. You know, and in my faith, I'm called to share my faith with others. That's according to my faith. That's your way to, you know, Jesus Christ and His death on the cross is your way to heaven. Well, I'm called to share that because that's truth. And our founding fathers understood that. And our founding fathers said our country is only fit for a moral and religious people. They wanted to, they put the First Amendment there because they understood we need to promote religious freedom. We need to promote faith. We need to allow that to grow, to flourish, because if people can exercise self-restraint, in effect, self-governance, if we're all, in effect, Robert, perfect Christians, I wouldn't need police. So I think our founding fathers understood that.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I've got an article here from LifeNews.com. It says MSNBC, perhaps we'll have some time later on, folks, for me to read. It's kind of a short article. But it says MSNBC calls Catholic nuns who don't want to be forced to fund birth control a threat. And maybe, you know, and I think that kind of, you know, goes off course with Obamacare and abortion and, you know, things of that nature, that it looks like even some religious are going to be forced to, or going to be tried to be forced to do things that are against their, the morales. But I do want to
move
on to the next.
Yeah, you know, Robert, there's, if I could, you know, because those stories are coming out across the country. You know,
mm-hmm.
I guess, my rights end where, in effect, where someone else's begin, in a sense, right? So, but we want to, again, I think, you know, right there, I think there's a reason our founding fathers made that the First Amendment. You know, maybe there's a level of importance here, I think so, as a priority. These are perhaps the most important. Of course, these are all related. I can't really maintain my Fourth Amendment, my Second Amendment rights, unless I'm exercising, in effect, my First Amendment rights. My freedom of association, for example, I'm going to be with the Virginia Civil Defense League. Okay, if I associate with them, I can work to protect my 2A and 4A rights. So, when you get back to the First Amendment, Robert, I've lost my train of thought there, where I was going with that. Religious freedom. You know, there's the story of the baker, this family business. They're husband and wife of faith, I guess Christian faith. And they find that, you know, that God defined marriage as a man and a woman. You know, and so they want to live out that faith. And they believe that's morally wrong, and they don't want to support that based upon their faith. Yet now the state of Colorado is going against them and saying, well, no, you know, you have to provide, bake that cake for, you know, the gay or lesbian couple that wants to get married.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that.
You know, that's an infringement upon your religious freedom. So, you know, your rights end where mine begin. And, you know, right now, I'm going to point back to our founding fathers, point back to the First Amendment. I have my right to exercise my faith. It's protected. It's supposed to be under the First Amendment. And no, the federal government, the state government, local government should not infringe upon that.
Well, and I mean, I think there's a significance to the order of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit of happiness is last, first is life, and then liberty. So people could take that as they want. But I know you only have a limited time. If you can stay later, of course, that'd be great. And I do have a couple more questions that I have.
Sure.
But before I bring them to that, I do want to get some of the panelists and hopefully some of the audience in, so if they have any questions as well. And then if we have time, if you can stay a little bit later, we can get back to my questions.
Yeah, Robert,
but first
I'm feeling a little more re-energized after being on the phone with you, Robert. Usually the night, I'm a morning person, Robert, but
great.
I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'll go as long as I can, okay?
Well,
you know, I've got an early,
morning
morning with my Raiders tomorrow morning, but we'll go as long as we can. I'll let you know when I'm kind of tuckered out, I guess.
Okay, great. Well, we'll have the first person come in, and this would be Cindy Todd, one of the panelists here. Thank you very much, Cindy, for calling to the show. And then also see James Neighbors on the line, who is the founder of Overpasses for Obama's Impeachment and also Overpasses for America. See you on line two, and we'll get you in there as well. But first, Cindy, thank you very much for calling to the show. And real quick, for the folks who are on the line, if you'd like to speak with Mr. Greenwald, just press the 1 on your number dial, and I'll get you in as soon as I can. But for those in the audience, if you'd like to chime in, you could do so at 347-945-7428. Again, that's 347-945-4428. Thanks again, Cindy. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Robert. How are you? And hi there.
Oh, good.
Peter, how you doing?
Hey, Cindy, doing great. Glad you could join us.
Good. Well, I got some questions, but I think before I get into my other questions that I had, all of us on the chat, we'd like to know, do you have a strategy for beating these rhino people that have all the money? And
there's a lot of money out there. You know, I see that a couple things. I know I've worked very hard over my Christmas break to establish a presence in the tweet world. I have a pretty steep learning curve with that, but I think I've overcome that. I'm reaching out there because I think if I get I have to reach beyond the 7th District to work on. I think Derek Cantor's got a $7 million war chest. There's a new candidate that's announced, David Bratt. He looks like a good fellow. I think a true conservative. I don't know him. Need to take a hard look at that. I knew I had to reach out across America, and I guess I thought of that because, you know, we at some point, my wife and I had supported Michelle Bachmann out of Minnesota, and she'd gotten support around the nation based on her conservative values, living by her conservative principles, and, you know, we appreciated that. I sensed that I needed to reach across America to fellow patriots and hopefully get a wide enough reach across America to get some support from around the country. So I've established that. I need to keep building that. I finally established the Facebook page and got that up. And of course, I've had my campaign website up since October. So, I mean, one, first of all, leveraging the Internet, leveraging the social media, that's foundational because I think that will go a long ways to overcoming, the massive amounts of money. I understand Eric Bratt's got some people with some deep pockets coming in behind him, but so this is the say this is the true grassroots campaign. I mean, I started this and hoping people just, like what I'm saying. And I think hopefully you have some trust and faith in me that I'm a true conservative and one who loves this country and loves God. But with that, so that presence. Then, two, I know I have to reach out to one, veterans. I think that's somebody I have a natural, connection with. Reaching out to veterans, also reaching out to, I think we're working the gun shows. We're going to hit all the gun show that's here in the 7th District and just outside of the district, just to reach out to. I understand that our 2A and 4A citizens out there, they're passionate about the gun rights. I know I can connect with them, and they're passionate, and I think they'd be big supporters for us. And also reaching out, I think, to the, the Christian evangelicals, the Catholics who are strong on, on life. I'm very passionate about that, and I think I can connect with them. So it's building, that's part, as I see, is building a grassroots campaign. My next hurdle, what I need help with, Cindy, is from people here in Virginia, is to get my 1,000 signatures. Of course, I'm going to get more than that, working to get at least I'm working towards getting 100 volunteers and each getting 100 signatures. I could walk in March 10th with 10,000 signatures. I think it would make a very strong statement to the people of the 7th District. So I'm not sure. I hope I answered your question.
And Cindy,
pretty much.
Okay, great.
Am I back?
Well, right, well, then, Cindy, of course, I'll keep your line open, and at this time I will bring in James. James, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, Robert. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing really well. Thank you very much for asking. As we say here, you have the mic.
Well, Pete, first off, I'd like to thank you for your service to our country, first and foremost. It takes a special person to be able to have the guts to be able to do that, and thank you for that.
Well, sir, it's been whenever I hear that, it's a privilege to serve my fellow Americans, sir. That's that's all I can say. It's a privilege to do it.
Well, again, thank you for that. Of course, with Robert kind of gave away probably what my primary question would be our movement started out overpasses for Obama's impeachment due to some silly government regulations. And to kind of reflect the larger cause, we've since renamed it to Overpasses for America. The important question is, would you support the impeachment and conviction of President Obama?
We need to go there. Yes.
Excellent.
I do. Let me explain that. There seems to be no respect for the law that he wanted, the Affordable Health Care Act, just the execution of it. I've been in policy and I've been on the other end of it. When Congress had passed a law affecting the manpower and personnel policies of the United States Navy, I was involved with that. I understand implementation laws. I mean, you can get bogged down in trying to make something happen. But I don't think they really – I get a sense when I see they don't care. They don't respect the law. Let me get back to Benghazi. I want to speak to that. I had the opportunity to teach military art and science, joint and multinational operations at the Air Force Academy. And, learning out there, just understanding of our organization, defense. We understand under Goldwater Nichols in 1983, we established the National Security Council. Involves the President, the Vice President, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. They form up as National Security Council anytime there's a crisis. Goldwater Nichols also established the regional component commanders, the combatant commanders. There's European Command, there's Pacific Command, Southern Command. Well, there's a new one that stood up several years ago. It's called AFRICOM. In order to save Ambassador Stevens and the three others there in the consulate there in Benghazi, it would have taken one phone call to a four-star general. General, bad things are happening. Take care of it. Do what you need to do. And then I get to, I know a little bit, we have air bases. Well, I don't understand. It's 9/11. Let's put it further in the context of 9/11. We know, as a military member, we always are in a heightened state of readiness. 9/11. If Al Qaeda can repeat what they did on 9/11 in 2001, they'll do it again. So we already know that. So none of this is acceptable. None of this is really understandable. And there should have been immediate answers given to the American people. And so, I mean, one call, we could have had Mach 3 F-16s coming out of Aviano, at least doing some kind of flyover. I mean, doing something, right? So, or why wasn't there a Marine amphibious ready group, a Navy carrier on station in the Mediterranean? I mean, you got to start answering these questions. You know, I guess the military is ready to respond. We do what we're called to do. That's what we're paid to do, to look out and maintain the national security of the United States and to protect Americans around the world. That's what we do. I just don't think we're given the orders. Well, we know we weren't, so I'll leave it there. There's something wrong there, and they haven't been forward with the American people, but we can talk about Fast and Furious. We can talk about the Attorney General. We can go a lot of places tonight, but Benghazi is the one I guess is near and dear to my heart. That's wrong. And again, as Robert started the show, leadership, leadership, leadership. You know, leadership matters. Can't lead from behind. If the House will not provide the checks and balances on the executive branch, who will? So let's leave it at that.
Well, that's all good to hear. I mean, it's all very good to hear. Very, very good to hear. I actually recommended to our Virginia group that they get behind you, because everything else you said, I completely agree with. I mean, I couldn't find an argument in there, and that's a very refreshing thing to see. I've followed politics all of my life. I've voted in every major election, and in most of the local I've got, I can't admit I'm a perfect voter. I can't say I'm a perfect voter because I'm not. It's responsibility is the big thing, and I really think that if we don't set a precedent, and it would be a very historical precedent, if we don't set a precedent with President Obama, it will basically give any future presidents free rein to do whatever they want, because they can simply point to the historical precedent that, well, you let him get away with that, and
yes,
why can't I? And
yes,
we need to, I'm very glad that you do that. One place that, with a very group of active people, and just to kind of spread your message out with some very politically active people, I'd have to recommend that you check out our group there in Virginia and tell them your positions. And I've recommended they go, if they're not listening now, to go back and listen to the archive.
And I don't have his last name, but I think he came to my very first rally. You know, we're just getting started. We decided, well, let's start it right here in my neighborhood, Charter Colony. And we held a rally on the 23rd of November. And I think one of your members came out. Dan was there. I got to get his last name. He's on Facebook with me. I've reached out to him a couple times. But, you know, if you could email me at Greenwald for Congress.
Dan Grad?
Greenwald for Congress. Dan, I can't remember his last name. Scabo Zabo or something like that.
Yeah,
my Facebook.
Yeah,
but,
Dan Zabo.
Zabo, yeah, that's him. And he carries. And we had an interesting conversation. He goes, Pete, do you mind if I'm, carrying? I go, well, you know, that's your right. Come on in. You know, come on and join the rally. So he was, it was good to mix it up with him. But haven't heard back from him. I don't know what's going on. But if you can, maybe prompt him to reach back out to me. Somehow we've lost touch. So he took a bunch of my folders to go get signatures beginning January 1st. But haven't heard back from him. But I certainly welcome his support. And because I can't do it without the grassroots support groups like Overpasses for America. Can't do it. Absolutely need you guys.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. And, in fact, I'll leave him a comment here so he'll get that and know to get that back to you. I know he just
moved.
Thank
you.
he just moved. So,
maybe that's it. Maybe he'll move. There's always something. But I just want to share with Robert. I believe in divine providence, as our founding father said. Divine, it's just one divine appointment another. I think God just keeps sending these patriots my way. So, I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that we're planning on doing all across the country is getting out and supporting candidates like you, and not really focus so much on the negative type campaigning, but really just getting out there. You know, I mean, we always take American flags, and of
yes.
course we always take impeach Obama stuff with us. That's just what we do.
Yeah.
You know? And but you know, I think they'd be very happy, definitely carrying some things out there to get your name out there so people know who you are. Because let's face it, that's half.
Yeah,
the
I can see it now. Green wall for Congress across some overpasses. That'd be some good, great free publicity. Huh? That'd be good for me.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's
the plan out.
we aim to rain on some parades and make some other people's days this year.
Yeah. Good. So definitely get out there and networking, and it's very important here for the grassroots. But I do want to bring it over back to Cindy, because she's
yes.
got a question on China. So go ahead, Cindy. Cindy, you're still there.
Okay.
There you are.
I'm having a little logistics problem here. Okay.
Got it.
Peter... you're a military guy, so I'm going to ask you a foreign policy question here. China's military spending has been increasing tremendously ever since about, last couple of decades, but really
yes.
on the fast track from about 2008. They have
yes.
moved from way down the line up to second behind the United States in military spending.
Yes.
And China is very soon to surpass the United States as a Mideast oil buyer, which will definitely change our relationship and our leverage with the Saudis.
Yes.
You've got this Xi Jinping guy that is just such a hardline, bold, he's just going to be hard to deal with. He's cracking down on religious freedom, and yet he's increasing a little bit of financial freedoms. He knows just how to keep power, and he's doing very good at it. Obama's been so weak in dealing with China, and that's one reason why he's gotten away with, spending so much militarily and doing stuff kind of on the sly. All this stuff he's doing, you wouldn't know about it unless you were looking at online papers and the few conservative papers around. And China's, of course, redistributing our money over to there. What should be our strategy to stay ahead of China and to stop their ascension to be above us? I mean, that's basically what they're looking for.
Yeah, Cindy, I'm going to take you back to the debts, of course, which could overwhelm us. I started thinking through this. I just established in my own mind three national security pillars. Number one is the debt. If you don't pay down the debt, interest rates right now are historical lows, 2%. If they go up to recent historic highs, even as high as 14%, you're saying the interest rate is seven times what it is today. You would be paying from $200 billion of interest on the debt to countries like China to 4 or 5 times that. So it goes from $200 billion to, $1 trillion just interest. It ends up consuming your entire budget. And then you don't have money to do the things that you need to do that we said we would do in the Constitution, and that is provide for the common defense. So the first thing, Cindy, I said, we have to, that's why I said restoration now. It's not layers now. We need restoration. We need to get back to the limited defined powers of the Constitution. We need change to Social Security now. I think I'm willing as an American in getting the debt problem solved, although I've paid into Social Security for 36 years, to the point where I have to accept that I'm not getting that. And that, I guess, the part of, you know, following our founders, it is our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. It has to be about sacrifice at this point if we want to get America back. If you want to be strong against, I think, that these rising threats around the world, including China, I guess with that, of course, I want to mention, of course, securing the border would be the other one. And then you mentioned Saudi Arabia, energy independence. I think we're seeing that despite the Obama administration. It's amazing how the free market has worked, that we've got these oil deposits. We found natural gas deposits out west in Dakotas. And we're perhaps maybe the first time we're on the verge of achieving energy independence. We're not dependent upon somebody like Saudi Arabia. Because I was there at that postgraduate school. We went into the first Gulf War. And I was concerned, you know, was this only about oil? I mean, I wanted to believe in my heart that, you know, it was about freedom. It was about freeing the Kuwaitis. But I did wonder if we would have really been there if we weren't dependent upon Kuwaiti oil. I don't want to be in that situation. Let's go do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because I need oil. I'm going to go there. Sure, I want to protect free markets around the world, sure. But to free the Kuwaiti people, you know, that was a great thing. And like I think it wasn't just about oil. So energy independence as much as we can. If we need, you know, produce our own oil here and natural gas here and, of course, deregulate as much as we can. I think we can burn coal. We need Virginia coal. We should be burning it if we can burn it cleanly. Let's do it, not keep closing Virginia plants and losing jobs here when we got a bad economy to begin with. But back to China, if I have to make cuts, Cindy, and we may need to balance the budget, we can't just avoid the third largest piece of the budget pie, of course, Social Security and then Medicare and Medicaid. But then there's defense spending. And we can cut defense if we had to.
But aren't we only spending 4.4 of our GDP on defense spending anyway? Though I mean,
well, yeah, as a percentage of GDP, you might say that. Yeah, Cindy, that to me, from as a percentage of GDP, you might say, well, you're only this much. But as a piece of the budget pie, it is the third largest piece. And then of course there's interest, of course, you know, which could incredibly grow. That's the fourth largest piece. So, but if we had to make cuts, I would say, you know, we have to maintain a strong Navy and Marine Corps. You have to maintain a strong maritime force because we do forward deploy. We do protect your sea lanes across the world to ensure, you know, the exports, imports, you know, maintain free markets, ensure, you know, allies like Japan, you know, can get their oil to get their imports they need, because they have to import many of the raw natural resources they need to manufacture. So I think that we need to maintain that strong Navy, to maintain that presence around the world. So if I were to cut, I wouldn't cut there. And we're already at the point where, you know, Reagan had us part of the Reagan buildup to a 600-ship Navy, and we're down below 300 ships and not building enough to even maintain that. So we need to, I think, restore our military as part of restoration now. And Chinese, you know, they may end up being our friends. You know, I know there's changes going on in China, and I hope for that. You know, maybe, you know, there are, as the Chinese are gaining economic freedom individually, you know, there may become, at some point, you know, perhaps China becomes a free nation. I don't know. We can hope for that. But in the meantime, let's maintain a strong Navy and maintain that presence around the world. So I hope I answered your question, Cindy.
Well, I think so. But do you play the game of Risk?
You know, yeah, I haven't a long time. I have. I think the last time I played Risk was I was in training at Fort Riley, Kansas, with my embedded training team on our way to Afghanistan. I think it was the last time, you know, some night, you know, we got a break from training. We were weekend night. We played some Risk. Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, hold on, Sandy. I used to love to play that game myself, but we do have a caller like to chime in, so let's go ahead and finish the point with Risk, and then I want to bring Linda in.
Sure.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, I was just going to say, you know, from playing Risk that, and from looking at world history, that if a world leader that wants to take over the world moves too quickly with not quite as many troops as he needs, it's going to spread him too thin, and he's going to lose his empire. And he'll end up being weaker than he was when he started. I see China as somebody who's just sitting back, collecting all the money, because they are, and they're collecting all the money, increasing the military just enough to not alarm anybody. And I believe that they have a plan in the future that the world is going to belong to them, and not by if it has to be militarily, so they will do it. If they can do it financially by ruining everybody, they'll do it.
Yeah, well, you know, here's a good story there, right here in Virginia. The largest pork producer in the world, Smithfield Hams, right here in Virginia. I believe it was just okay that I'm not sure what went through, but this was last year. The story was that, you know, when there was an offer from a Chinese firm to buy it. Well, why is it the Chinese can do that? Well, they're lending and we're borrowing. We are printing money. We're printing money we don't have, right? We keep printing money. The dollar gets weaker. We're as a country getting weaker. That's why I'm reading a little bit of Ron Paul now, and I wish I could sit down with Ron Paul, and I just read his book in the Fed. And by the way, I know we're getting off here, but I think I do support this auditing of the Fed. We need to exercise the checks and balances. We need to exercise oversight. The branch, the House, the branch closest to the people needs to exercise restraint, to exercise control over the Fed. That is the people's dollars. We need to do that, maintain a strong dollar so we can maintain a strong military. So it's all related. You're right. I think you got great insights, I think, on China. I think that's exactly what they're doing, and they're buying us up as they do it.
Yeah.
Well, and two things before I have Linda come in.
Robert, let me take you back to the fair tax again, really quickly on the fair tax.
I
think is the one thing that could spur economic growth, manufacturing again here in America, and bring some of these, billions of dollars that are offshore back to America that we could then, have good jobs here for Americans, right?
Okay, well, before I let in or get in Linda, I just want to talk about energy dependence. I have to say this as the green conservative that I am, the environmentalist that I am, I also like to see more done with green energy, alternative energy, things of that nature.
Yes.
One of my passions is helium-3, more research into when that, and we can talk more about that later. There's something else I was going to bring up, but I guess I had a brain freeze like we did earlier tonight. So I'll go ahead and open up the mic. Linda, thank you very much for coming to the show. If you could just tell us where you're hailing from, what's on your mind. Thank you very much, Linda.
Hi.
Hello, Linda.
Hello. Sir, I'd like to thank you for your service and your tax.
Well, you're very welcome. You're welcome. Glad to serve, and I'll pass along your thanks to my wife as well, because she really bears the greater burden in my 25. Been married 20 years, so she's been through a lot of moves with me. So. Hey, Robert, I'm afraid she's breaking up.
Yeah, Linda, I think your line's breaking up. You may want to hang up and then try to call back, or maybe you're in a bad spot
better?
For your phone.
Yeah, that sounds better.
It sounds like it's not cutting out as much as it was, so it's cutting out really bad.
Is it still cutting out, or is it better?
It sounds better, and if you may have to speak just a little louder, though, or whatever, bring the phone closer, I don't know.
Okay, everybody knows, most of you know, I'm not a yeller, so okay, I'll do
that. That's okay, Linda.
I have to be with you on Twitter. I'm Linda, and it's PJ Stryker.
Oh, you're Linda, and I by the way, I got hacked. Maybe that was the Cantor campaign. I don't know. I was hacked, and maybe it was Dr. Brad. I don't know. Who knows? I shouldn't say that. Have a little fun there, but I was hacked, and I apologize. I did reset my password. I think something a little stronger. Who knows? I'm not sure exactly how it happened. The one
Griff, he sent me a direct message, hey, I'm afraid I got hacked, and then I got hacked. So I think I'm sorry about that.
That's terrible.
That's okay. Well, I'll get some shout-outs for that. But my question is, what can we do? Well, I have two questions. Let me ask you the first question is this. Your petition, you need the signatures. What can we do? Where is that? How can we get it out?
Well, two things, two requirements. They have to be a registered voter in the 7th District.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
You can come from anywhere. If you want to, if you're in California, you want to travel to Virginia, you can come and help me. I'm not sure where you're having it, but you can come here.
Sir.
Okay, you come to Virginia, or you can contact a friend that's here, and they can come out and help me. You know, I can pretty much get anywhere in Virginia, you know, within a couple hours. So everyone's here within 2 hours from because we're centrally located. So if you're in Virginia, they can come on down and come and help me collect things anytime between now and March 7th, the Friday, because I'm going to be camping out, I guess, Sunday night, I believe it is, and be outside the State Board of Elections, hopefully with a stack of forms with 10,000 signatures. That's the goal. So if you can get here or somebody can get here, they can come help me out and collect signatures from registered voters in the 7th District. So that's number one. Two, Linda, this is a grassroots campaign. That's why I knew I had it. And thanks to people like PJ Net, I can reach hopefully, you know, millions across America. Say, you know, Pete, we like you. You know, you're what we're looking for. We think you're going to stand strong with Senator Cruz and Senator Lee, you know, and other principal conservatives in the House, like Gohmert. I like Gohmert down. Did I get that right, Gohmert? Louis Gohmert down in Texas. I love that guy. Stand with guys like him, and so I'm hoping that people across the country, you know, Pete, they're going to go on my website, use the PayPal, and make a, you know, make even a $10 contribution to my campaign. If we get thousands to do that, I can then afford, Linda, to send out. I think I can win this election with 20,000+ votes. This is going to be a small election this year, unfortunately.
We can get it there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great patriots on right now. And one of the questions I would have for you is that can you generate some tweets, the information that you've got, so that we can send them out?
Yes, I will. I will do that.
That would be great, because
if we can
go into your account and then just retweet and send them out with a photo or whatever, that would be great.
With the power of PJ Net, we can do that and reach millions. So,
yes,
Lynn, I appreciate the – I keep getting this good counsel. I'm glad people aren't afraid. Hey, Pete, you need to make this improvement here. In fact, somebody out up there on the Twitter world said, you know, Pete, look at your website. It wasn't clear that I was running a scanner, so I had to do that. And, you know, it's not slick, but I think I'm getting the message across, you know, who I am. My very first thing on there was my Dear Patriot letter, because that's what's on my heart. I want to talk to my fellow patriots out there, and we need to – Save America. So, but I think, Linda, as I'm hearing you right, they get a Twitter that explains, I guess, website making a donation. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
That you were looking more. I need to do better with a tweet that says, be a little more.
Right. And I'll, one with the donation and also the one to gather volunteers and you know, whatever else you put together, if you can put, I know I have one of your photos.
I think we lost her. Hello?
I think we might have lost you, Linda.
Yeah, but good, Robert, great suggestions for me. I think she'd like to see some more photos out there. I can definitely do that. Like I said, Robert, my daughter was on Twitter. I was not. My learning curves, I'm growing a grassroots staff, and it really was for a time back in September. I was a staff of one, but I think I'm overcoming my social media learning curve. Was pretty steep. I think it's leveling off here, so we can make that happen.
Well, thank you. I don't know if you can still hear me.
I can hear you now.
No, we can hear you. Thank you very much. It dropped off for a minute, but then it's back.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and it's an honor to be on with Cindy and all of them, too, and all the patriots, great patriots. Thank you.
Well, Linda, thank you very much.
Get some more
pictures out there.
And we'll keep your mic open if you'd like to chime in. And then I want to welcome to the new folks who came into chat, and also want to welcome both Trog and looks like Rex is in from Liberty Thunder, and that is another show here on Blog Talk Radio, conservative talk show that you can hear, I believe, at 10 o'clock on Sunday evenings, so check that out. It's called Liberty's Thunder here on Blog Talk Radio. It's Sundays, 10 p.m. But for anyone else who'd like to listen in or chime in, you could do so at area code 347-945-7428. If you want to ask a quick question of Mr. Greenwald, but while we're seeing if anyone else would like to chime in, I do we'll go to one of the questions I had that I'd like to ask tonight. And it seems that during the election, the Democrats moved to the left to excite their base. However, the Republicans moved to the left, too, to appear more centrist. But the problem is you know, we're always moving to the left in either case. Would you agree with this assessment, and do you believe, is it a good political strategy, and how can conservatism survive in such a political climate?
Yeah, I guess I've learned, Robert, in my time as a Navy leader, naval officer, You have to have, I believe, in principle-based leadership. You have to stand on principles, and you know, people have to know who you are, or they're not going to follow you, and they can't trust you. So it's about a relationship, about standing on principles, about having trust, finding truth, and following that truth. And so I think this gets back to, I think, the in part, I came back to James. I landed a job here. I think God brought me here to James River High School. Well, I know a guy from here, to James River High School. But in part, I was inspired by Mark Levin and his Liberty and Journey book. And in the end, I think he talks about the communist, the conservative manifesto. And he challenged his fellow Americans, say, look, you have to go back into schools. Those who follow Marxist thought have gone into the schools. They've gone in, you know, mm-hmm. into the schools. They knew if they captured the young, they have America. They're right. I mean, so... he challenged those who, the patriots, those who, you know, make the sacrifice, leave business, leave whatever you're doing, go into the schools, teach the Declaration, teach the Constitution, and start bringing up the youth, show them the truth. And so it's not going to be one overnight, Robert. This is going to be decades, but it has to start now. So you stand on principle. You're going to have some losses along the way. You understand that we're not going to win every battle, but we got to win the war. So you're not going to win the war if we're not going to stand on principles. So let's get our Constitution back. Let's get our Constitutional Republic back. Let's get our liberty back by standing on principle. I think I want to go stand with those who understand the enemy. Let me get back to Robert. We don't negotiate. You don't negotiate with the Marxist, I'll put that, or those who are following Marxist thought. You don't negotiate with them. I think you have to understand the enemy. I think Ronald Reagan understood that when he was dealing with the Soviet Union. Trust but verify. He understood we had to have a strong defense. We weren't going to negotiate from a position of weakness. No, we're stand on principle, and we're going to assume a position of strength. We're not going to compromise. So I think with that, again, we're losing battles along the way, but in the long term, we get our country back. Are you still with the
Brett? And what?
Okay.
Well, go ahead. Hello. And then what I've got here is, do you believe that the partisanship truly exists between the two parties as they stand now with the folks in it now? Or do you think that the bickering in Washington is just a smokescreen to allow progressive policies to be enacted? And if so, give some examples. And if the Republican Party is truly an opposition party to the Democrats and liberalism, how far ought the Republicans go in compromising across the aisle?
Well, I think there's some in the Republican Party that are partisan, if you will, if you want to use that term. I would like to think that they're just patriots. They're ones who believe in the Constitution. They want to stand by the Constitution. They want to restore the Constitution. I think there's some. I think Steve King seems to be, from what little I've seen of him, he seems to be that kind of representative. I think Louis Gohmert seems to be that way. Those are fellows that got strong conservative records, standing for the limited
defined enumerated powers of the Constitution. So kind of who you're looking at, I think, Robert, within the House or within the Senate. Ted Cruz, obviously, example in the Senate. There's others. I think, you know, I'm not sure. Maybe I didn't know Representative Canada, the House Majority Leader, 12 years ago. He doesn't seem to be standing strong now. Well, I know he's not standing strong now. We've got the record now. So I don't know the motivations, Robert. I can't really speak to that. Is it just weakness? Is it fear? Or is it really true beliefs that you're not really concerned about the Constitution? I'm not sure. I can just look at what I see. I see the evidence that you don't seem to respect it. You don't seem willing to stand up for it. I don't know if that's a smokescreen. I just will say, well, I know the right thing. Let's stand up for what's right. Let's get back to let's wave that banner of conservatism. Let's wave the Constitution, if you will. Let's get back to that, and let's educate our fellow Americans. And that, I get these guys to know that that's what's best for them. Freedom. That we need to get back and teach the youth that I can do in the classroom. That yes, if I give you a liberty coin, one side would be freedom, but with that freedom comes your personal responsibility. But you know, take that. Mm-hmm. You know, as Patrick Henry would say, you know, give me liberty or give me death. You got to have that attitude. Liberty is that valuable. You know, do you value liberty? It's much better than slavery. You know, you make your choice today. Are you going to choose liberty today or are you going to choose tyranny today? Make the choice. So I think that's where we're at. We just need to keep holding forth the truth.
Awesome. I agree. And before I bring you back on the mic and give the mic over to you, James, I want to welcome American Refugee Radio on, which you can also find American Refugee Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. And you can also find Constitutionally Correct on Blog Talk Radio as well. Welcome, Barry. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. So go ahead, James. I just want to say thank you for American Refugee Radio and Constitutionally Correct for coming in. Go ahead, James.
One thing that I had, we've discussed a lot here in overpasses, you know, especially, you know, with my national admins, is what exactly would it take to get jobs back in the United States? And, you know, the simple answer that I came up with, and I don't know if it's the right one, so I'm just, you know, kind of looking for your perspective on this.
Yeah.
Is you know, what I propose is just raising import taxes to the point to where foreign goods were more expensive than American-made goods. And,
yeah.
If you don't agree with that, I said, I'm not an economist, so I don't understand necessarily how that all works, and I don't know if that's the perfect answer. What would you do to bring jobs back to the United States from overseas?
Yeah, I think I got to get back to answer an earlier question. I think the fair tax goes a long ways towards that, because what it does, through the fair tax, not only that, it's a tax on the sale of any good here. If that's an imported good, that's taxed the same way. So you get that kind of balances, that kind of levels the field. So if you're importing a good and it's sold here, it's taxed. So I like that idea. And what I like better, if I could go aside here real quick,
go ahead.
I like that it's not as intrusive. You know, today when you pay the income tax, we have, since 1913, we the people somehow were talked into forfeiting our Fourth Amendment rights. Okay, so we all get concerned about the NSA. Well, look, what do you do with your income tax? When I do my income taxes today, well, first of all, I got to go pay for TurboTax, and then I'm not even sure that's correct, but so that's bad enough, right? You have to go buy pay for an account, so that's kind of crazy. But then I have to tell them I'm married. That's really not the government's business. I have to tell them whether or not I have children. Again, not the government's business. I have to tell them whether I own a house. Not the government's business. Whether I pay a loan on that house, an interest on the house. And then I have to tell them whether I give to a charity and what charity and how much. And I'm thinking, well, none of that makes sense. So I've totally forfeited my Fourth Amendment rights so that I can pay what? The correct tax. we need to go back. We need to rescind the 16th Amendment. We need to go to the fair tax, where I can just go buy something and pay a tax, and the government does. You know, look, we can fund the federal government. I know, and we should fund it less. We need to fund the federal government, give us the money we need to have a strong defense. One thing, provide for the common defense, without, again, you having to reveal to the federal government everything about yourself. We can do that. We can do that today. So I'm not sure what's keeping us from doing it. I think what's in part, it's everyone who benefits from a complex tax code. I'm trying to think through that. That's a lobbyist who can go and he can keep himself in a job by somehow convincing some representative or senator to change the tax code to benefit his company or his group or, you know, his interest group. Benefits. Well, you know, we need to stop all that. We need to free all Americans. And we free corporations at the same time. This is great. Free corporations. I don't believe that the American work ethic is totally gone. I have some concerns as I watch our youth today. I do have some concerns. I think we can restore America, restore hope by increasing freedom, and with that more opportunity. And then people will say, you know, if I work hard and I get to keep the fruits of my labor, then I'm motivated to create and to invent and bring, you know, what made, bring all that back that made America great to begin with. I think that the fair tax is a single one thing that we could do to help that, because it eliminates the corporate tax as well as the federal income tax and the combines the Social Security and Medicare all into one. So I think that'd be the single thing we could do. Let's rally around that.
Well, that sounds good. I mean, everybody, corporations and individuals alike, ought to pay their own. Yeah, they really should. They, I hate to say, you know, pay your fair share, because it sounds way too much like Obama. But let's face it,
that's what's good about the fair tax. There is just, you know, you control it. If you're frugal and thrifty, and you can buy the 99 Camry.
Right.
Like me, buy the used car, you don't pay tax. Now, if you're, you know, you're maybe a little more disposable income and you want to buy that new, Navigator, Lincoln Navigator, whatever you like to buy. I think Ford the only one who didn't take the, you know, they didn't get the buyout or whatever
right.
it was. Buy the Lincoln Navigator, right? And you can pay a little more tax if you'd like. You know, that's your, you get to control
the vault.
Isn't that a great thing? I mean, let's give that power back to the American people. You, as the individual, get to control and assess how much you pay. But there's the studies have shown that a national sales tax is actually provides a more steady stream of income to the federal government than an income tax. So, especially in hard economic times during the present recession or depression. So,
well, anything that we can do to direct people to being more responsible, especially in their financial matters in America today, is an outstanding idea.
Well, yeah, I was thinking that the national debt, I guess we haven't been concerned about it, because if I look at the national debt clock, you can pull that up, go to the national debt clock, you look at the personal debt of Americans, well, you know, if we accept personal debt in our own lives and too much of it, well, then, of course, we accept it in our federal government, because it's we the people. So we have to – there's got to be change. And I like what what my church does. I'm very, very happy with my church, and they've got some great leadership there, because what they encourage people to do is to be good stewards of their personal finances. And we have classes – well, they have a class starting on that this week. I guess I missed that. They kicked it off on Monday. But they're trying to, you know, educate, train, equip – the people there in my church to be good stewards and, you know, get out of debt. So give them true freedom when you're out of debt. So that's a good thing.
Well, you know, yeah, absolutely. It'll drag you down, drags an individual down, and it's dragging our nation down. I mean, I don't know what the number is on it now, but I know
17.3 trillion, I guess. Yeah.
Well, okay. I was the interest on the debt at one point not very long ago was eating up 50% of all taxes taken in by the federal government,
yeah.
And that's ridiculous. I mean, 50% on the interest alone. And that's unsustainable. That's just completely unsustainable.
And Britain's to destroy America if interest rates go up. So,
I just have to say I like everything you've said so far. And just to give you a little heads up here, as of right now, when I threw your name out there on Facebook, I've gotten you about 50 more likes on there. So the word's starting to spread.
Awesome.
Up 50%, you know, based on, anyway. Well, I appreciate that,
While the other guests were talking, I was spreading your word out there. So, I think my admins there in Virginia are asleep right now.
I'm up hard, we're up late campaigning with you all. I just maybe Dr. Brad is sleeping and maybe Eric Cantor is sleeping, but Commander Greenwald's fighting a good fight. So here we are.
That's the thing. You know, we're going to be out there fighting. We're going to be out there fighting for you and other candidates like you, because you mentioned this earlier. You know, we're at war within our own country. There's not any shooting going on right now. It's an ideological war, but it's not one that we can be complacent with and sit back and just wait for Superman, because we're all Superman if we choose to be. Be the hero to your family by doing something for them, and everybody can do that. It's just we have to decide that that's what we're going to do.
I'm reading a good book. I've read perhaps you've seen. I don't know if you heard Dr. Ben Carson, but I encourage the listeners out there. Pick up Gifted Hands and read the American Success Story. Two boys raised by their mom and overcome incredible odds, and because the neurosurgeon and forms this first separation of twins joined at the head. It's just an amazing story, Dr. Ben Carson, and hopefully we'll see him run for president. But he's a great story, and I'm reading his latest book. I guess it's America the Beautiful, and he talks about restoring America's greatness by going back to the founding fathers. So. I just encourage the listeners to go pick up Dr. Carson's book.
And real quick, gentlemen, I know Cindy had to step away for a little bit, and I just want to call out to see if you're back. You're back, Cindy? Okay. That would be enough.
Yes, I'm back.
Are you? Oh, there you go.
I am back.
I keep forgetting I got to give a little time because you meet Mike and then you come back on, which – I appreciate, because it does keep some of the background noise out of there. So I gotta remember that.
I have to be careful about unmuting, because it's right next to my turn off button, and so it's kind of sometimes I turn myself off.
Yeah, especially on the extended version, where if you call in, you can't call, you hang up, you can't call back. And speaking of the extended version for folks, we do have about 27 minutes left of live time, but of course in most evenings we do go into extended version of the show, which of course you can hear only live, but the extended version, unless you call in at 347-945-7428. Unfortunately, if you don't call in before the top of the hour, you will not be able to hear the extended version live, but, of course, you can listen to the archive, which is available immediately after the show. So if anyone would like to listen to the extended version and continue the conversation, go ahead and call in at 347-945-7428. Thank you very much, Cindy, for indulging me there. Go ahead.
No problem. Peter, I got a little comparison question for you here. What senator do you think you will most likely resemble in your voting record, in your proactiveness, in your style, however you want to, everything all together? Which senator do you think you'll most likely resemble? And you can pick one from the past, too, if you feel akin to that. And then what past president do you most think that you will emulate?
Yeah, have you watched the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Oh, yes. I love that movie.
Yeah. I guess that's my favorite movie. I'm pretty idealistic, I guess, that way. I just love Jimmy Stewart. It's a Wonderful Life. But Mr. Smith and the Wizard of Washington, one of my favorite movies. So my daughter purchased that. That was my Christmas gift this year. So I like Mr. Smith. He's good. That's probably not what you're thinking of. You're thinking some real life center. You know,
yeah,
I guess
I like that.
I like Mr. Smith. There's a man who stood for principles and was holding out. And he gave it his all, not knowing what the end would be. Then he has a victory. So, yeah, truth won out. Truth won the day. And that's a great story.
Yes, it is.
Senator today, I'm trying to think back. I guess, only maybe because I just really admire Senator Cruz right now. I guess that's what I'm thinking of right now. So Senator Cruz would be one. Let's see. And you're asking for a president, right? Well, I grew up in Springfield, Illinois. Some people, I guess, have concerns now with Abraham Lincoln because how he exerted his executive powers in the Civil War. But we were at war, so I guess maybe I too easily excuse some of that. But the more and more I read on Abraham Lincoln, the more and more I admire him. Of course, a close second, if not right there, of course, George Washington. Those are great presidents, each in their own time, each in their own way. But, I think Abraham Lincoln, just because of his own personal trials, losing two sons, and I guess it was two sons while he was in office. I mean, he just went through incredible personal sacrifice, crushing pain, and yet he carries on. And when I read his second inaugural address, he talks about with firmness in the right, as God gets to see the right. I just very much identify with that. That's what I get back to, my Judeo-Christian principles, my Christian faith. And so, yeah, Abraham Lincoln's a real hero for me because I grew up in his hometown, Springfield, Illinois. So I have to rank him number one.
Okay, real quick then, do you recognize that there's a worldwide elitist plan to force the United States into a one-world order where we will, by treaties, more or less, give our sovereignty away and turn it over to some world oligarchy?
You know, I'm just not well read enough on that, and maybe I need to, maybe Ron Paul, I think, has written a little bit on this. I just need to do some more reading on that. Do I think it's possible? Yeah, I think it's possible. I would think, based upon my knowledge of the Bible, I think Revelation points to that's going to happen sometime. So there's going to be one world leader at some point. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think that is the future. Just probably based upon I think it's possible. I think it's possible. I think there's some pressure, even with the United Nations today, which I think, we ought to stop. We have our budget problems. We need to, eliminate lending to countries that are then again turn around and lending that money back to us at interest. So that all kind of strange. It's all kind of backwards. But yeah, the United Nations. I think there's always pushes from the United Nations to impose international law upon us that really undermines our Constitution. So those pressures already exist. I mean, that's already been happening. So I agree.
So we could count on you not to ratify any of these stupid treaties that they've been trying to get ratified.
Yeah, and this gets back to, it seems like maybe it's a far-fetched idea. We ought to be doing, in a sense, less in D.C., less in government, that representatives and congressmen ought to be spending as much time back in the district listening to their people and perhaps educating. When I'm in Congress, I'm coming back to my district, and we're talking about the Constitution, and we're talking about the Declaration, we're talking about the Founding Fathers, and about this educational, and that's part of, and then listening, of course, to the American people and their concerns, and then going to Congress. But I think doing less, and while we're doing less, we're going to stop some of this that craziness and stop the passage of any bill that would support some of the things coming down from international institutions like the United Nations. So, yes.
Well, we've got here by Data Genesis here in the chat. It says, the House does not ratify treaties.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess we went down that path. That's really the Senate. Yes. So thanks for the
clarification
there, Robert. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the clarification. Yeah, I don't even say correction. Yeah, we kind of run with that one, but you're right. The Senate's going to ratify anything coming down from anything that's international or any treaty that we're signing with any nation. So, yes. But I would work to be a voice against that, even from the Congress. And, we can use that voice. That would be one thing where, Representative, the House Majority Leader, the House Majority Leader, you have a voice, and you haven't been a voice. So
yep.
He's been concerned with small things like whatever this last kid. I don't want to be too derogatory here. Maybe it's a good thing, but it just seems that, again, that's not the purpose of the role of the federal government to be down here thinking about, well, I guess they're using contributions to campaigns now to give to kids for to school or something. I really wasn't following it close enough. But, look, first of all, eliminate Department of Education. Eliminate that. Ronald Reagan said he was going to do that and wasn't able to get it done. We need to eliminate Department of Education and leave education to, in my situation, to the people of Chesterfield County and to my fellow faculty in the administration here at James River High School. I think we can figure this out. And along with the people, the parents, who we serve here at James River High School. So let's get the Department of Education out of it.
Well, I would like to just throw in my two cents worth on the Department of Education. I agree with you.
Sure, go ahead.
But I think one thing that would really reverse a lot of this leftist leaning in our education system that really has infected the minds of our children would be to require have an elementary school level, a middle school level, and a high school level teaching of the Federalist Papers.
Yes.
So.
Yes. I just did in my classroom today. I mean, with my cadets, I said, look, I follow James Madison. I don't follow Karl Marx. Let's just paint the contrast right there. Let's follow the father of the Constitution, not the author of the Communist Manifesto. Let's make this clear contrast here. One respects your God-given right to personal property. One says that the property belongs to the state. Let's make the contrast. Let's start with Federalist 51, the reason we have government. James Madison had a clear understanding of human nature and why we needed government, and while at the same time we need to control government. So let's read some more James Madison. Robert, did I lose you?
No, I'm still here. No, I'm multitasking you sometimes. I do here
that's
on the
good.
Show.
That's good.
I've got like eight different tabs here up on the computer.
You're busy. It's good.
Yeah, busy is good. It's certainly better than sitting around slacking and trying to figure out what entitlement you're going to get.
Well, yeah, and I think it's part of so important to restoration. Now we need to restore the American family. That's a hard thing. That's not going to happen overnight either. But just from my own personal experience, that the students that are challenged are struggling at school today. They're not coming to school prepared mentally, physically, spiritually. They're not ready. It's usually because the family is broken apart. So we need to really, fundamentally turn back to God, give our lives back to Him, really commit to the vows we make in life. Especially dads. So, I'm gonna take care of my wife. I'm gonna take care of my family, regardless of what money you make. Just do that. Fulfill your role as a father, and that is the foundation of our country. We're losing that today in many parts of our culture, and we need to restore that. I think churches, synagogues, mosques, I guess, have a big role to play in that. To restore the family so we can restore our country.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you entirely on that. I mean, it's, just the disintegration of family values in this country, it will be the death blow to this country. It will be the death blow to any country, not just ours. You know, and if you look at the Soviet Union for a good example, their birth rates were extraordinarily low. They were at an unsustainable rate, and you know, because their people just were not having kids because right. they knew what they would be born into. And then if you were to look at the post-Soviet Union birth rates in Russia, they've just exploded because you give people a little bit of taste of freedom. And they have hope I would have to say that that's probably a big reason why a lot of people don't have kids in America today. You know, I mean, our birth rates really are at an ours have fallen to an unsustainable
yes.
rate.
Yes,
and it's because of lack of hope and opportunity. You know, there's so many regulations that have been, you know, that have been passed into law by Congress and state legislatures. We can't just blame it all on D.C. It's happened, you know, on local levels and state levels too, where, you know, entrepreneurism is extremely difficult to get started now because of a horrible regulation that,
yes.
you know, just a guy with an idea that could make a living it's next to impossible for them to start a business. And let's face
yes.
it, I mean, that's what got us out of the Great Depression was individual entrepreneurship. And,
yes.
and you know, it's one of the greatest innovations. You know, it's what made America the standard. You know, made in America was the standard by which the world went by. And you know, the disintegration of the family and whatnot like that, it's all well, it boils down to the fact that, you know, we've overregulated ourselves, I believe, into hopelessness. And people
yes.
don't want to have children born into this country because they know how depressed they are, whether they express it or not.
Yeah, I picked up a book. I just started reading it because I picked up Ron Paul's In the Fed. He mentions an economist named Hayek, I think is his name. I don't have the book here in front of me, but he says, I think the title is The Road to Serfdom. And other authors have talked about this numbing effect of government regulation and bureaucracy over time. It just numbs you. And I think you've kind of touched upon that.
You know, I did actually, it just crossed my mind with the fair tax thing. I can think of one group of people that really probably don't like you very much right now. Tax attorneys.
Well, you know, Linder and Bortz, who wrote the book, they address it up front. When they said, you know, a lot of the attorneys will say, no, there'll be jobs out there for us. We're going to be hired by those companies who need to, you know, make sure their books are correct, because you got a lot of companies that are starting up and they're growing and they need good accountants to be doing good things, not doing wasteful things. I mean, what is it? I think they estimated the compliance costs, including the cost of my TurboTax, I guess, $400 billion a year. I mean, it's just wasted. We're not producing anything. We're just doing paperwork, right? I'm looking forward to that. I know Ann and I are looking at each other right now. You know, I got to do my income taxes again. I'm thinking, after I've learned about the fair tax, I go, this is not necessary. This is a waste, and it's burdensome. And we can end that today. Today, we could free all Americans from the burden of having to keep all this paperwork, to report, to give up forfeiting our Fourth Amendment rights to pay our correct tax. Now, we can make this all very transparent, very simple, with a national sales tax. I mean, the states already do it. States already have a sales tax. So we have, you know, I don't know how many states, most states, 40-some plus, I think, have a sales tax. So it exists, and we just need to institute that on the national level, and states can help process that. And businesses already do it. And at the same time, we abolish the IRS. That's another plus, which has been abused, right? We give the government power, as George Washington warned us. It's a fearful master, terrible master, and the IRS is an example of that today, been abused by the Obama administration. So let's end the IRS with a fair tax.
Well, yeah, I find myself completely in agreement with you. I mean, the IRS is, it's just another example of a bloated, unnecessary agency. It really isn't necessary. I mean, the fact we fought a Revolutionary War over 2% taxes, and here we are today, tax this and tax that. It's just amazing. It was actually a point I was going to make, and I just kind of spaced on that.
Where is the revolution? Where are the, I guess, well, we're beginning. We're going to rise up, and we're going to change this. It's starting.
There's a great awakening, I think, going on in America right now, and that's one of the things, with overpasses, we're really trying to do is to get people, to think again, to look around themselves and see what's actually going on. And that's probably our primary goal. Think for yourself. Don't believe what's being told to you by the talking heads. Don't believe anything they say. Go look it up. Go educate yourself. Don't just believe because you're told to believe. Use the free agency that God gave you and make a decision. Here we are. We're edging up on 73,000 likes on our Facebook page, and we've had over 1,000 protests across the country, and we're waking people up. Protests and rallies. It's not all of them are negative. And the whole point is to get people to realize that they're not alone. Because before I started the whole thing. It's part of the big government leftist thing that's gone on is to isolate the individual Americans to make them think that they're alone and they can't make a difference. You look at the out in California where they cancel football championships so people don't get their feelings hurt because they lost. We need to reinvigorate the thrill of achievement. Like the old wide world of sports was on ABC, the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. That's part of the American, that's part of humanity. It's not just American. We just happen to be the champions of that for the longest time. And, it's really, to coin a phrase, another phrase from pop culture, we need to go back to the future.
Yeah.
And return to our roots so we can prosper again. I've got to call our admin out in Virginia and have a long conversation with her about getting people mobilized for you. I've enjoyed listening to you and everything that I've heard you say, as far as positions, it's so refreshing. It's like I love Rand Paul to death. Everything he says is great, and then he'll bring up just deep a hint at amnesty, and I'm like, oh, stop it,
Yeah, you've got these guys who were considered conservatives, and now they're turning back and definitely being more showing their rhino colors, as I would put it.
Yeah, and I need to read some more on I just got finished up with End the Fed, and I just don't feel like I'm smart enough on the issue. Maybe that's the we're talking about that's the incredible power that exists within the Fed as I understand. And they do things that we as individuals cannot do. A bank under the Fed, you can have like $10,000 worth on deposit, but you can loan, make up a notional number. You might have $10,000, but you can lend out $100,000 under the different, these fractional rules they have. Just seems kind of, it just doesn't seem right to me. So maybe Ron Paul's on to something about ending the Fed. I want to continue to take a hard look at that. And when I come to some type of conviction, I'll put that up on my website. But certainly we certainly need the audit that needs to happen.
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk about it for a little while, but then it kind of died off as things do happen in the political arena. You talk about a topic for a while, and people get all excited about it, and then they die down. One of the things, real quick. Is that I do see there's about 5 minutes of the live time left. Time sure does fly. And so we'll be going into the extended period. So for those who want to hear the extended period or chime in, just go to 347-945-7428. Again, it's 347-945-7428. If you'd like to listen in, we appreciate it. But if you'd like to chime in, just push the one on the number dial on your phone or send me a message on Facebook, or you can also send me a message here in the chat to let me know if you come on. I do see some callers who it's an odd-looking phone number. I don't know if it's Skype or something of that nature, so you may have to chime in a different way, or perhaps I'll speak with you on a call screening. But go ahead. I didn't want to interrupt you guys. I just wanted to bring that out. And so, but one of the things maybe we'll talk about since to connect to what you're just talking about is I want to bring up Hillary Clinton and the talk about her running, and you talk about different issues. And one of the things that's in the news that you kind of faded out, you still hear about some, but it's very evident that people are still thinking about it on Twitter, and that is about the issue of Benghazi. So is there, would you like to address that that topic?
Yeah, I think I did a little bit in the past, but yeah, she needs to be I just saw a part of her testimony in the one committee hearing, and I think her comment was, who cares? I go, well, I care. I care about my fellow Americans. You were responsible for them. You were given the charge of their safety, those State Department employees overseas, and you failed them. Why haven't you admitted to that? So, no, I don't think that can't go away. That needs to be front and center of any campaign. And she, as we anticipate her running for the presidency, she needs to be held accountable.
Well, I have a question for you on that. The CIA, in the hearings over Benghazi, stated that 400 man pads, surface-to-air missiles, had been stolen from the Benghazi compound. And this is just speculation, you've got a lot more military. The question I have is speculation. I mean, they've admitted that those were taken. What, in your experience in the military, why were they there in such an unguarded facility?
I have no idea. I don't think I can answer that. Meant to be unguarded so someone could get them. I mean, it's been pure speculation. I mean, that makes no sense to me. I mean, I just think about think about the control we had on our personal weapons, my M4, M9. I mean, you're taught to have positive control of your weapon, even your personal weapon, at all times. I mean, to think that you're leaving, you said several hundred unguarded. I mean, it's just craziness. I don't understand that. So how could that be?
That's kind of where I'm at on it. Why?
Had to be intentional, right? Is that intentional? I mean, you meant them to be taken? What? I mean, I don't know. I just hope that eventually the whole truth will come out, and, Americans will know, as they should. As they should, right? It's we the people here. I think, again, we've lost this. There's that elitist mentality. The people should know.
Gentlemen and ladies, we are about to end with the live time tonight here on Bard's Logic Political Talk. We do still have the extended version, which can be heard on the archives as well. But I do want to thank everyone who came in tonight and listened live. And if you'd like to listen to the extended version, of course you can call in at 347-945-7428 and join some of the others I see here listening in. But if not, of course, you're welcome to listen to the archive and, of course, share it later. So for those who are listening live and only have less than a minute to be on, you take care, have a good night, and we look forward to you coming to the next show where we will have Evelyn and Nicole Kelly on talking about their travels to Cuba and Colombia and answering the questions, is the United States government slipping us into communism? Thank you very much, and good night. And at this time, we will be Getting ready to enter into the extended period here, which lasts about 59 minutes. That's what time we have allotted. We don't not necessarily have to use all the time, but we do have that for us. So thank you very much, and here we go. Thank you, gentlemen, for letting me get that in before we stop airing live. So go ahead, Peter.
Hey, Robert, just thanks a lot for having me on this evening. Enjoy being with your audience and having a little Q&A, so greatly appreciate the opportunity. And if I could, just point to your listeners that they come visit me at greenwallforcongress.com. It's greenwallforcongress.com. They can sign up, help me up, send a donation. Hoping to get some small donations from all across the country there, Robert. So help me with my campaign so I can send out some direct mailers out to the people of the 7th District, let them know who I am. So I'm looking forward to Overpass for America and their help here. So, but, Robert, I got to go. I got an early morning with my cadets all morning, but I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate you staying on and staying on as long as you did as well. You know, I know you do have the early morning and a very busy day and nights to come. So, yeah, we look forward to seeing you again, both on Patriot Journalist Network and hopefully here at Bard's Logic, too, and some of the other talk radios that I'm sure you'll be on in the near future. So you take care and good luck, and please keep us posted on how things go.
Sure will, Robert. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you. Take care. Good night.
All right, good night.
There you go. And then, Cindy, since I hear you on, I'd like to give you the mic and see if there's anything you'd like to add in our extended version of the show tonight. Go ahead.
No, not really, other than I just hope that he can get some traction. He's got to get some press. He's got to get an army.
You're kind of breaking up a little bit, too. Still there, Cindy? Okay, as we wait for Cindy to come on, we do have someone who called in. So we'll go ahead and open up their mic while we wait for Cindy. Thank you very much. I've got a 0112 to start the numbers. Give us your name, where you're from, and thank you very much for coming to the show.
Hey, Robert. This is Mark, man. I've been listening all
night.
Hi,
Mark.
I thought this thing came in with a caller ID from the 202 area code, but I guess not.
It
but
does.
Either way.
That's on there as well, but there's a bunch of, there's like three numbers before it, so I don't know if that's like
really?
The United States national
really
number on there.
Okay. Well, we won't worry about it. The you know, Robert, I've been listening very intently, and a lot of the conversation is compelling. But I wanted to make a point, you know, when we look at a candidate running for office, or when I look at a candidate for office, I'm looking for a man that's guided by principles that are consistent with mine. The fact of the matter is, you know, over the next 2 years in Congress, there's going to be issues that come up that we don't even know about today. So we need to elect people, men and women, to Congress and the Senate and the presidency that are guided by principles. And you and I were fortunate enough to have just really an organic, spontaneous conversation. And now that Peter's left us and we won't embarrass him, I thought it'd be nice just to share how that just casual conversation among citizens went.
Okay, sounds good. I don't know how we would embarrass him, but...
No, I won't put him on the spot. But,
yeah, we don't want to put anybody on. Go ahead.
It was to set the stage, and I'd really rather you tell the story. It's your mic. But there were several of us patriots just getting together on Skype, having a conversation about politics.
Oh, yeah, I remember
and
that.
Topic, mm-hmm. The topic came up, and it was about 9:30 at night.
Right.
And I said, well, heck, let's just call him. So we did.
Right.
And it really turned into a very revealing part of the man and the principles that guide the man. So, and I'd like you to tell that story, Robert, rather than me. But let me tell you a story, what happened today.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't mention it. During that conversation that we had that night, or maybe it was a previous conversation, I told him, here's my phone number. You can call me anytime. If it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you can call me. I'd be honored to hear from you. At 6:30 this morning, my phone rings. It's Pete.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the news just was officially announced yesterday that another challenger has entered the race. And this challenger,
right,
from the appearance, I haven't done the research, so I don't want to speak, you know, on the specifics. But he was written up in some pretty high-profile conservative press. And he didn't ask the question outright, but I could tell what was on his mind. He had been approached by some of the local powers that be in the conservative Tea Party movement that maybe he should consider stepping aside. I said, Peter, I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's the wrong question. I said, I think we can ask the right question, and if you answer the right question, all the other questions are much easier to answer. I said, Peter, didn't you share with me that God called you to run for Congress? And I wish I could have been there, because his jaw hit the floor. And he said, thank you, brother. He said, that helps. He didn't say if he was going to continue or if he was going to quit. And I listened tonight in great anticipation of hearing what he had to say, but also based on that private conversation between he and I,
mm-hmm,
I thought, ooh, he might use this as an opportunity to say he's bowing out. But I get the impression that this is a man guided by principles. And if God told you to do something, you got to do it. And I didn't say this, but it was implied. If in his faith, if God didn't call you to run for Congress, he needs to quit right away and man up and say, I was wrong. That's the kind of man that Peter is. A man that would call a fellow patriot at 6:30 in the morning. And I was very impressed by that. But if you don't mind, share your take on that conversation and share with whoever's left out there listening to this how you felt that went.
Well, I think it went very well. I mean, he was actually without any type of preparation whatsoever. We just called him as a conversation, but my take on it is it was a conversation, and I know almost in a way as a pre-interview or interview. That's why some of the questions I thought that maybe I'd ask tonight, I didn't, because, I mean, just for our knowledge, Mark, is he covered them during that conversation. And I was impressed in that, I mean, you could tell it's what he meant. It came straight from him because there was no pause. I mean, I really didn't sense any type of pause where he actually had to think about his answer. And there weren't as much policy answers or things of that nature. It's more of answer on principle, and they just float out with any kind of thought. So you know that whatever he's going to run for, whatever he's going to support and work towards, he's doing it in a genuine manner, and that really stuck out to me in that conversation. So, and then we had about five people on the call, Mark?
Hey, Robert, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear you now, but I can't hear Mark.
I wanted to ask you guys, Mark had said the other night on your last show that he was concerned with did Peter have the inner fortitude, the strength to, have the view on abortion.
That's unfortunate, but something happened and his call was dropped.
Geez. Okay. Well,
so
maybe
go ahead. Go ahead with what you're saying. I may be able to get back with him. Go ahead, and I'll see if I can contact him and find a different way of getting back on if he can do it.
Well, I was going to ask him, did he ask, because he said last week that he was going to ask him what exactly his views were on abortion as far as in the instance of rape and incest. And he was very adamant that he needed to say the right thing. And I just wanted to know, that subject came up while you guys were talking to him, and did Mark get a satisfactory answer to that?
Yes, he did answer that, and he did answer satisfactory to Mark, because, I mean, when we talked about, and these are conversations that were behind the scenes, so I don't want to, you know, say too much without Mark being on the line,
yeah,
you know, talking with us, you know, some of these conversations are behind the scenes. But I will say that the answers that Peter gave were satisfactory to Mark, because he's, you know, he was a very staunch supporter of, you know, pro-life, and so and those are conversations, you know, that you know, like, you know, Cindy can have behind the scenes, you know, off the air, because I just don't, you know, I mean, it's not you know, bad, but I want, you know, I'd rather it come from Peter or Mark, but it was satisfactory. I know he's very strongly pro-life,
okay.
And so I don't want to make any answers for Mark
question.
Or for Peter.
That answers my question. But
and James, we still got you on the line here, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, if you got any comments that you would like to make, and then I'm going to try to get a hold of Mark real quick to see if there's a way we could bring him on if he can do that. So you guys go ahead. You guys have the mics, and I'll be right back with you.
Well, I would just like to say that I hope that we have an army of people like him running for office. You know, whether you know, he's perfect on every single stance that we would like, you know, that'll remain to be seen. But just from what I've heard tonight, if he did nothing else but stand by the principles that he stated and stand by the policies that he stated, you know, he would be, you know, fantastic for America. You know, we need an entire Congress full of people that have policies and, you know, and beliefs like that. I mean, I've gotten to really, you know, in the 2 hours that we were here, really gotten to like him quite a bit. You know, he seems to be genuine. He seems to know what he's talking about, and seems to understand what America is, you know, with unscripted and non-teleprompted questions and answers. And, you know, that's you know, especially in the era, in the Obama era, that's a rare thing. And you know, again, you know, maybe he's not absolutely perfect for everybody in the conservative spectrum, but I would have to say, you know, from everything that I've heard so far, wow, you know, I mean, unless he just, you know, suddenly, you know, something, you know, came up where you're just going, holy cow, you know, I can't believe that. But based on a first impression, you know, we need this guy in D.C., and we need about 534 more of them. I don't see where you could go wrong with somebody that's you know, based on what you know, moral principles and constitutional principles, and obviously he's got tenacity. Look at the length of time he's been, you know, he served in the armed forces, you know, and that's something that's a rare quality in people anywhere, and especially in this soundbite society we have today, where, you know, where people want instant results and they don't have tenacity. You know, if they don't get it right then, you know, they just take their toys and go home. And, you know, he's got some qualities, you know, just, you know, like the basic conversation we've had here, and that, you know, and that you just don't see. And, you know, I really hope that he's everything that, you know, this that he showed on you know, tonight on the show, on the radio, you know, on the program. Because if he is everything, and you know, my gut tells me that, you know, he likely is, it would be a wonderful thing to see him. I mean, just listen to the strength of his, the way he talks. I could just imagine, you know, him and Trey Gowdy just chewing up the Obama administration in a select committee on Benghazi. I mean, you know, that may be all the way until, you know, obviously, you know, he's got to get past the primaries and you know, become the candidate for the, you know, for the GOP in order for that to happen. But there's power in the people, and if enough people get behind him, they can defeat what people see on television, you know, with getting out there on the streets, because what's going to have a stronger impression, flashy commercial on television, or, you know, people actually out there supporting them? You know, and it's going to be the people that are out there supporting them where everybody can see them, and you know, because they'll see if there's people dedicated to them. And I don't know. I hope he's everything that he seems to be, and it appears that he is. And I would have to say that unless something very bizarre comes up in, you know, in the future, I would have to say that I would endorse this guy for, you know, for Congress.
I think we can trust him. He comes off as very sincere. He's not pulling any punches. He knows that we're a conservative bunch, but I think he would talk the same way regardless of who he was talking to. I don't think he would candy anything or reduce his conservatism if he was talking to a different audience. I just felt like that's the way he really does feel, and that's what you get. What you see is what you get.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what we need. You know, warts and all, we need people in D.C., you know, that's what they are. It's what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, folks, I believe I have Mark back here on the line. You with us, Mark?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, one of the things Cindy asked, and this was shortly after you came off the line, was about his stance on abortion. I don't want to speak for Pete because, you know, she knows that's very important to you. It's near and dear to your heart. And so, you know, I just, you know, said that, you know, it was adequate for, you know, for your stance. You were satisfied with his answer on the conference call, and since that was a conference call just with, you know, a group of us, I didn't know if, you know, I was going to, you know, just tell everything that was on that, you know, that conference call, except the point that, you know, he did give a, you know, satisfactory answer, and also that, and plus, this, I mean, we are an extended period, but it will be recorded and archived, so.
Sure.
So,
I actually had three questions for him. The first one was about abortion. And what I wanted to do, I wanted to ask the question in such a way that no matter how clever his answer, if it wasn't the right answer, it would be very well known. Okay? So I didn't say, you know, are you against abortion or would you support legislation that would limit the, you know, I didn't ask any of those, you know, technical questions. I asked a principled question. And the question I asked was, under what circumstances would abortion be a viable option to consider? Okay? So he could have come back with an answer that even many professing evangelical Christians would say, well, right for abortion. And he really gave two answers. He gave a two-part answer. He gave the short answer. That was none. There are no circumstances that abortion should be considered. Then he went on to say something very profound. Now let me say this, and I say this not to self-aggrandize, but to give context. I've served on the board of a crisis pregnancy center ministry for several years here in Tallahassee. And during that time, we were trained in how to ask challenging questions. We were trained in how to respond to challenging questions. And we were trained in persuasion techniques. And I really am greatly appreciative of the training that I received because it was really good. but all of it put together was not as profound as what Peter Greenwald told me. He said, if you believe that life begins at conception, and then he went on to say a bunch of things, but that nailed it. And that is exactly the strategy I turned on him this morning. Do you believe that God called you to run for Congress? Because if you answer that question in the affirmative, you know what to do. And if you answer it in the negative, you know what to do. So I was very impressed with his principled answer. He could not evade that question. Any answer he gave me that was qualified, I would know that he's not pro-life. I followed up with two other questions and said, suppose that you were sitting in Eric Cantor's office right now as the elected congressman. I said, we've had a couple of issues. I would want to know, I don't generally like asking or being asked hypothetical questions, but these are actually historical facts. The debt ceiling. How would you have voted? Would you And he says, we've got to deal with this now. We're going to deal with it later. It'll be harder to deal with later. You know, we need to deal with this now. And if that involves shutting down the federal government, then that's just a necessary side effect to solve the problem, and it's going to be, that's a pill we're going to have to swallow. So I was satisfied with that answer. So then I followed up with the third and last question is, Congress is considering to extend the unemployment benefits. Would you be in favor, if you were Eric, if you were sitting in that chair today, would you vote in favor of it or not in favor of it? He would say not in favor. He went on to pretty much recite exactly my feelings on the subject, but he actually went further than I had given it any thought. He said, unemployment is, first of all, funded. Government really shouldn't even be involved in it. That's a private matter. It's you know, required by law, but why has the federal government even got its fingers in this pie? That told me a lot. And he went on to discuss things like, you know, that unemployment was set up for 26 weeks. Now, at the end of the 26 weeks, if you're still impoverished, we do have programs to give relief to impoverished people regardless of the reason you're impoverished. But there are people that have been collecting unemployment for years that, quite frankly, don't need it. They were wealthy. They are still wealthy. And I would not begrudge them the 26 weeks that they got it because they had paid into it. It was funded. It is an entitlement. They earned it, so to speak. But at the end of the 26 weeks, no. And if you need groceries, like, you know, then you go to your church. We have, you know, EBT cards. We have a lot of social welfare programs that are intended to preserve the necessities of life in a survival mode. So those were the three questions I had for him, and he got an A-plus on all of them and actually enlightened me, and I'm forever changed by his simple response to the abortion question. If you believe life begins at conception, abortion is never a viable alternative.
I do remember all that that conversation.
Well, I'm the one that called him, I guess.
it was great. And as I said, I mean, he just came right out there. There was no pause or anything. He just, you know, came out and didn't know exactly how anyone would react. I mean, he didn't know any of us. He might have just had maybe a conversation or a couple with each of us, and some of them he didn't have any conversation with at all. He didn't just...
Well,
he just
said
it from his heart.
I mean, we ambushed him. You know, I mean,
yeah. Actually, that was kind of the impression that I had.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were what, four or five of us on the phone.
Yeah, five of us, yeah.
And each of us representing some sort of, you know, media influence or outlet. And so he didn't react that way. You know, like, what are you doing calling me at home at 9:30 unannounced and, you know, ganging up on me?
Right.
He was very warm. He was very warm. You know, and. So I'm impressed, and I don't live in Virginia, But I just sense, Robert, we've got to find principled candidates that we can support. I'm all about, you know, I we're all mad as hell, and we should be. But, you know, when we start asking questions like, well, you know, gosh, how, you know, look at forces arrayed against him. Well, didn't we have this discussion when we first met Robert with Newt Gingrich?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we gonna act on principles or probabilities?
Well, I'm actually, that's why I've been a little bit quiet. I'm having a discussion, quote unquote, with someone from the CRA Newt Gingrich fan club.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, I digress.
You know, it's your mic and your show, and I just appreciate, you know, you reaching out to Peter and inviting him. But I hope that people not only listen to Peter, but seek out. I don't care if the guy doesn't have a Chinaman's chance. Somewhere in the chat, somebody asked the question, how is he going to win? I just said he isn't. We are going to rally behind these people, and we are going to win.
And with let me make a little bit of the clarification, at least how I like it. And I appreciate you saying, oh, it's my show, my mic, but it's the Grassroots We the People show, so I'm just the host. So take as much of the mic time as you want.
Yeah, who pays the bill?
Well, yeah, that is true. But
I'm borrowing that from a little-known politician called Ronald Reagan.
That's true.
I heard of that guy once.
But I'm impressed with this guy. I realize that he's, this is a David and Goliath. I realize
that. Right.
But he's being sensible about it. He's done some math, you know, but if he, as a principled believer, has heard a call from God to do this, then he needs to do it. And I, you know, there's everything he's done has impressed me. He's not a polished guy in politics. During the show, you know, he would just start on talking points rather than answering questions because, you know, he's nervous and he's, you know, he's not there yet. But I know this, what little interaction I've had with him has been very intense. And I am convinced that this is a principled man with conservative principles that we need to elect.
No, I agree. I agree. We got to just do everything that we can, you know, to network and teamwork and work together so that, you know, we can get, you know, groups of different folks together to make sure that happens, or at least work as best we can so that we at least have the recognition for people to know, look, you do have opposition out here, so straighten up. I mean, I would prefer, of course, for him to win it, and I still think that, you know, there's a chance that can happen. We just have a lot of work to do to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, and it's tough, but I can recall publicly, you know, Ted Cruz, you know, publicly stating recently back in the Make DC Listen hashtag, you know, he recalled that he was polling 4%, and he said he turned to the grassroots people on social media. He credited social media as a grassroots movement. And I'm sure many of those people were not in Texas. And I think we just need to uphold these people. This is what we want. Because even if they lose, I think American Refugee had a pretty good comment that if he comes in there and depending on how the rules are in the elections where they're running,
mm-hmm.
and puts a scare in the canter to the point there has to be a runoff, he
right.
says, you are going to see RNC money uncorked like you've never seen before.
Oh, yeah.
And that tells you something, or that tells me something. They're protecting their asset. And you know, good. You know, let them pour out money because that will expose the truth of what they're backing. I don't personally have anything against Eric Cantor. He says a lot of the right things. He's voted, like all Republicans, 41 times to repeal Obamacare. But those votes are very symbolic because
right.
everyone that cast those votes knew darn well it was going nowhere in the Senate. So it's a safe vote.
Mm-hmm.
But when it gets down to the nitty-gritty of the battle, okay, these people are collapsing, as Peter so well pointed out. They raised a white flag. And we need people to stand up against all odds. And we need to stand behind them so that they will have the courage to stand and that they will be not standing alone and hung out to dry, because the machine we're fighting against on the left is very well organized, and the machine that we're fighting against in the RNC is very well organized and very well funded. So
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to win this with numbers and with our voices.
Right. And I think that's where, you know, Patriot Journalists come in. We can network with the other, you know, talk shows and folks with what you're doing, you know, here as well with the I can't even talk. You guys have talked my mouth too much. Overpasses for America there, James, and we definitely get it, you know, get all of us together in a common cause there.
Yeah, well, we're not well organized, and as basically, as Republicans, we get very active during the election cycle,
mm-hmm.
and we and then after the election, whether we won or lost, we break camp and we seem to disappear until the
right.
next election cycle. That's not going to work.
That's not what the other side does.
No. Go to Unite Blue. Believe me, they're very well organized, very well funded too. So, you know, I think if we're waiting on some champion from Washington, D.C. to muster us up, I think we've already waited too long. Ain't going to happen. I think it's time that we organize ourselves and we identify people that we can support. No, they won't be right on everything, but we've got to elect principled people, principled. It's really not about the issue of the day.
Because as you point out, the issues are going to change.
The issues are going to change. Principles don't change, Robert. Circumstances do.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, and you're absolutely right. You know, principles will guide you, and if you're guided by principles, when that new circumstance comes up, you'll make the right decision.
You'll know what to do, and it takes a lot of courage. There's times when you must make tough decisions, like saying, no more unemployment. Okay.
As hard as it may be on those that get cut off, and, you know, for some it would be extremely difficult. I mean, the fact is, you
mm-hmm.
just, you know, it's you know, they're only supposed to be there for 6 months. You know, if the president or Congress can't do something to revive the economy, or rather, instead of extending it, they should be doing something to revive the economy. And we know what that is right now, and that's taxes. Hmm. You know, and that includes Obamacare.
Well, it's a Tenth Amendment issue, James. You know, where in the Constitution does it say that the federal government is in charge of a guaranteed standard of living, even if you lose your job? It's not in there.
Well, it's nowhere.
Well, there's something
there,
about the general welfare, but that doesn't empower the federal government to extend, you know, federal unemployment, you know, unemployment benefits that are really it's an underwriting issue. It's an insurance contract. It's in the private, it's in the free market. You know, and I'm of the opinion that if we were to go read the book of Acts, ACTS, in the New Testament, there is a prescription there about how we as individuals come together and take care of one another. But we've decided to deviate from that. We're going to do better than that. And the church has stood by and did absolutely nothing. And I think our problems that we have today are a direct result and in proportion to the degree by which we have varied from the biblical model.
Well, you know, and see, that's the thing. We have deviated, you know, from the biblical model. And you know, even back when I had, you know, agnostic issues. I read the Bible. I determined one thing even then, that if you took nothing else from the Bible, even if you were a devout atheist and took nothing else from the Bible, it's an ideal study in how to be a decent human being and how people should take care of each other. If nothing else,
you can be a devout atheist. Yeah. And the principles outlined in the Bible are consistent with a
natural law
and productive. Yeah. I mean, there are certain law. I mean, you just can't, you can't spend more than you make. You know, there's just, you know, you were born into this world dependent on your, upon your parents. Well, gee, as it turns out, later on in life, your parents are going to become dependent upon you.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds fair to me. When, and you don't have to believe in my God or any God to understand these basic realities. Go look in nature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's organic. So the principles that I espouse as a Christian are consistent with conservatism. But you don't have to be a Christian to be a conservative.
Right.
You know, I'm working with Catholic groups, with Jewish groups, agnostics, you know, on the pro-life issue. That's an issue that, you know, we can say, listen, we don't agree on a lot of this stuff, but we all agree on this. Let's work together on this.
Right. And that's what it's going to take, because one of the issues we talked about earlier is the elites. And that's one of the things, you know, I've said a number of times in the shows, is, you know, I don't even care if you're a liberal. If you, you know, want to support we the people, you know, versus the government, and where, you know, it's about the freedom and the liberty of, you know, the people instead of, you know, the elites, and the elites taking over, you know, us, you know, the everyday citizen, then, you know, definitely you could join our cause, you know, regardless of ideology, because it's about us, it's about we the people more so than, at least for me, ideology. Now, of course, you guys know I'm a conservative. But I would welcome, you know, liberals to come on board and help us with their causes, even though we don't agree with probably much of anything. But, we, you know, if we could find a common cause, you know, and, you know, what the government's doing to us, regardless of our party or ideology, then, of course, they're welcome to work with us.
I think we need to find areas of agreement, you know, and focus on those. That's part of the basic charter and mission of Patriot Journalist Network, is let's find something. Somewhere, let's find a rare occasion that a politician in D.C. does something right.
Right. Or correct. I don't want to be redundant.
It does something correct. And let's applaud that and support that, and hopefully it's a page out of the dog training manual. Rewarded behavior tends to reoccur, so we'll see.
And since we're bringing up Patriot Journalists, I do want to have you, you know, talk more about what's going on the 22nd of January this month, from 1 o'clock to 11. We did mention it here on the show, but if you want to give some more details on the, you know, Pray for the End of Abortion event, I'll say, well, you go ahead and take we've got about 20 minutes left of the extended period. The last 5 minutes I'll need to close things out. So we've got some time to talk about that, so let's do that now.
Yeah, I don't want to talk that long about it. This is not a Patriot Journalist thing. This is something that we have piled on, that was an organic hashtag on Twitter that took off, primarily organized by a group of Catholics. And it took a life of its own, and some of the people that we're involved with became passionate about it. And that is a very concentrated effort we're making right now. We're reaching out saying, what are you passionate about? Let us put our muscle with your hustle. Let's work together. We've got some organization. We've been doing this a year. It's time to start flexing that muscle and facilitate organized political activism. So we've got a venue that we use, and it's a chat room. It does YouTube videos. It's got tweet buttons. It's got all kind of cool stuff. But this is not the only event. We had people come to us saying, stand with Phil Robertson. So we did that. Okay? We had somebody concerned about Martin Bashir. We did that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, we're going to meet you where you're at. Find your passion and bring your passion to us, and let's find areas of agreement. And then let's focus on that, and let's get people active. Let's get people to come to the place as a group, and let's get them to click this button and send that message out. Let's support each other by retweeting what they tweeted. And we've got metrics that look at this, and even though it's in its infancy, we started on October 28th this year with this red meat concept. We are pumping out thousands of tweets per hour, and that is with a handful of people.
Right.
A handful of people. Katie bar the door when we get 50 or 100. Katie bar the door. You won't be able to get on Twitter without that message.
Right.
You know, being presented. And there's people out there who have been talking about it and thinking about it, and we need to inspire them to join us and give them a way. They don't have to be ideologically perfect. They don't have to give 24/7. They don't have to give all their money. Just give them a rung on that ladder that they can reach, and hopefully they'll reach up, and then we'll help them to the next rung and the next rung and the next rung. And we are not inferior to the left. We are just less organized.
Right, and a part of that, you know, and I'm not giving an excuses for so, you know, folks, is, you know, we're usually the, you know, I would say in a large part it's the conservatives. I may be presumptuous in saying this, but I would say it would be the conservatives in a big way that's kind of the engine that runs America. The reason I say that is, you know, and you've heard this before, is, you know, we're out trying to take care of our own, you know, we're, you know, out there working and, you know, having our small businesses, things of that nature. And then, you know, where most of our time is, you know, trying to take care of, you know, kith and kin and, you know, and other people around us, you know, other kind of volunteering and not as much out, actually out there campaigning. And I think the government is actually trying to make it even harder for folks to be able to pay attention to what's going on politically in two ways. One, making it so you do have to have two, you know, two-income homes now and working, you know, sometimes two jobs, and also throwing so much stuff out at you at the same time that it's hard to keep up with everything.
Well, the liberals tend to play the compassion card, you know, when actually conservatives are far more compassionate.
When, you know, look at their donations or something like that, the charities.
Liberals are more compassionate as long as it's someone else's confiscated money. They're very generous with it. But their own money, no, no. When you look at blood donors, you know, almost any criteria or any means of measurement that you subject it to, it is conservative that lead the way. We are the most generous, the most giving, the most sacrificing, the most responsible, okay? We are a giving group, okay, that want to give back, that want to share. But it's... You know, it's a whole lot easier to, you know, receive than to give. And we've got a cultural problem.
James, we want to go ahead and have you chime in.
Well, you know.
We're running out of some time here, so go ahead.
Yep, we are getting a little bit low, you know. I just looked at the clock when you said that. you know that's the thing, and you know, you Mark, you hit it right on the nail on the head. Is, you know, the as far as how conservatives are around election time, you know, we get all worked up, get into a frenzy, and you know, get out there and do something right around the elections, and then afterwards we're like, oh, all is well, you know, and just go, you know, pack up and go home. And the fact is that if we are going to make, you know, fundamental changes in this country to return to our roots, and it really is now, it's gotten to the point now that we've veered so far left, you know, that, you know, what people, it's really, it's crazy. I actually got into an argument with somebody that didn't like Ron Paul. And she said, well, he's just an anarchist. I'm like, no, what you don't understand about Ron Paul is that the positions that he supports, which appear to you to be anarchy, are simply veering away from this nanny-style behemoth government that we have, and to the people that are acclimated to that, to having government intrusion in every facet of their lives, would see that as anarchy. What that's really called is liberty. And you know, it's going to take a concerted, nonstop effort from people all over this country to reverse this trend. Well, it's not a trend, it's a reality now of intrusive, overbearing, controlling government. I mean, do we need some agencies to keep certain things in check? Well, most certainly. You know, we obviously can't allow nuclear power plants to be spewing radioactive waste into our waterways. And, you know, we can't allow, you know, criminals to run around robbing people and things like that. You know, so that, you know, it's not anarchy. It's a government limited to doing what it's supposed to do, and this overreach that has just accelerated since Obama came along, it just quite simply got to be stopped. I mean, if we want to see, you know, a return to, you know, made in America, where that's the standard by which everybody else measures their products. Oh, well, ours is great, but boy, that made in America is fantastic, and we just can't match that. But, you know, because that was the standard for a very, very long time, you know, around the world. And we just can't simply be fair weather patriots. And you know, and it's going to take changing a mindset and having a core group and cooperation with other people that feel the same way. And, you know, now, Mark, you know, as far as overpasses, you'll have to forgive me for not getting more of us in there more often. I found out, and God bless them all, that, you know, that they're excellent at Facebook, but the majority, and I'm talking like 90% of my folks, had never even thought about using Twitter until I suggested it. And so I am kind of gathering up. I'm gathering a troop, and we're doing a few test runs and whatnot like that to try to get into things and whatnot like that. But yeah, it's you know, don't worry, we haven't forgotten you, and I still do retweet things that you guys do. So I haven't intentionally neglected to get back with you. It's just, You know, it's a learning curve for everybody, myself included. You know, I mean, I always thought Twitter was
that's
just
part
of what
we
little
do, James. Yeah, Twitter boot camps. You know, I mean, it's
I need to direct people more for that. You know, I mean, I really probably would do myself a favor if I would direct more over there to you, so they could go to the boot camp and then they could say, well, look, if you did it this way, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, that's great. I didn't have time to go look at that. So,
but you made a point earlier, and we can discuss that, you know, privately, James. You made a point earlier about government regulations and things like that, and the thought occurred to me as you were saying that, as I listened, is it's only unprincipled people that you need to regulate. And
well,
that's
what Peter said.
We need to focus. Yeah, I think that's very profound, you know, because it's really the small minority of people that lack principles that need the force of law and government, you know, to regulate them on their behalf. So, you know, that's why I think it was quoted by one of the founding fathers, you know, you cannot have this kind of freedom without a moral compass, without a moral foundation. And morality comes from, you know, too many people look at the law as a source of moral authority. And that's a very slippery slope. Slavery was once sanctioned by the government. Women couldn't vote, and that was sanctioned by the government. Abortion is now sanctioned by the government. You know, the law is a just piss-poor moral compass.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And the bad thing is about that is that laws aren't based on known moral principles. They're based on the flavor of the day and polls. Mm-hmm. And You know, if you were to go look at laws from, you know, the 19th century compared to 21st century laws, you'd look at the two and wonder if we were even the same nation.
I think you shared, or was it Peter that shared a story that there's a baker, a little bakery, that refuses to, you know, create their product and do their skill, you know, for a homosexual marriage, a homosexual ceremony. We have gotten so far off course. You know, there's a moral foundation in the Bible. Well, first of all, even if there were no Bible, okay, look in nature. Come on, you know. it doesn't work. But homosexuality is defined in the Bible as a sin. And the reason God defined that as a sin is not to take our fun away from us. He's not a cosmic killjoy. He has these rules, these boundaries, for our benefit. Okay? But we've gotten to the point where we know deviance, it's no longer just a deviant thing that we should tolerate. Now we must cater to. Now they're entitled.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
They're entitled to Social Security benefits. They're entitled to, you know, survivorship benefits. It's about money. I don't know of any reason that a homosexual pair cannot practice their homosexuality without any interference from the law. I think they're pretty well free to do that. But no, that's not what it's not about the act of homosexuality. It's about the entitlement of the marriage covenant. And, you know, the state never was empowered to marry anybody. The state is only to record and certify the existence of the marriage. The state cannot define marriage. It did not invent
right.
marriage. But we do need to have a record of who is married and who isn't, you know.
Polygamy now.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I perceive as the role of the state, the government. In marriage, is there needs to be official records as to who's married, to whom. But the state can't define what marriage is. That's already been defined.
Well, folks, I hate to say this, but I do see that it is almost time. There's only about 7 minutes left of the extended version, so I want to thank both you guys for coming in tonight, you, James, and you, Mark. It's great to hear from you, and we'll definitely continue these conversations both at Patriot Journalist Network at www.patriotjournalist.com. And, of course, we also check out the Overpasses for America, and that's overpassesforamerica.com as well. Correct, James?
I'm sorry. Say that again. I broke up.
Is it overpassesforamerica.com?
Overpassesforamerica.com or just the easy one, overpasses.org.
Or overpasses.org. Okay, well, it was great to speak with you guys. Looking forward to our next show on Wednesday where we will have Dr. Evelyn Kelly and her daughter Nicole Kelly on the show talking about their experiences over in Colombia and Cuba and discussing, is America's government sliding us into communism? I think it's going to be a great conversation, a very interesting show. So folks, check that out, and we appreciate you all coming on. And I will end tonight with, I got a couple minutes. If there's any 1 minute, we got 1 minute for each person if they want to say something before I close out. We had a little bit more time than I thought. So, Mark, do you want to say something for a minute, and then James, and I'll close things out.
As soon as I chew this cracker up immediately.
Okay, we'll go to James and then you, Mark. Go ahead. James and Mark, we'll switch it over.
Well, I just have to say that, one of the things that Overpasses is going to be doing in 2014 is supporting, candidates that stand by the Constitution and having rallies in their support. And, you know, if that's something that anybody would like to do, you know, join us. Get us out there and, you know, get out there with us and help spread the word, you know, for positive action in America to improve this nation, to bring it back from the brink of tyranny that we do exist on, you know. And you can find us on Facebook at Overpasses for America. You can find my tweets on Twitter at hashtag OP4IObama. And then you can go to our website at overpasses.org, and we'd be happy to, and very, very happy to have you join us.
All right, Mark.
Okay, well, I just want to spend my minute, Robert, thanking you for reaching out to Peter, and I just want to encourage you to continue to let's find principled conservative underdogs, David versus Goliath, Rocky versus whoever, and let's get behind these principled people, and let's forget about, you know, the establishment and what the probabilities are. Let's let our principles guide us, and let's get together on that, and we will win.
Well, very well said. And, yeah, I do have reached out to a gentleman here in Ohio. He's going to be running against Mr. Kasich, here, the governor of Ohio, because Kasich's really disappointed a lot of conservatives here in the state. So hopefully I hear back from him soon. It's only been a couple days. So, but I will thank everyone for coming to the show tonight. We look forward to seeing you again next week. And also check out all the other archives of the other shows here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Check out the links to some of the different places we talked about tonight. And, of course, check out our Give page where you can make donations to some wonderful organizations and also make donations to the Patriot Journalist Network. And so I went tonight, as I do each night here on the show, and that is with the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. Take care, folks. Good night, and we'll see you again. Take care.